5 seconds. I'm going to call to order a regular meeting for the Grover Beach City Council on Monday, February 1st, 2016. Would you all please stand and rise with us for a moment of silence for the brave men and women of the armed forces who protect our freedoms every day? Thank you. Remain standing. We are going to go to our flag salute. This is one of our most favorite parts of the meeting. We have some of our local youth that come down and lead us in the pledge. So tonight, we are going to be led by Liliana Ramirez. She is 10 years old and a fourth grade student at Grover Beach Elementary School. She loves reading, math, science, and writing, and she is a very conscientious student. That's a good thing. Liliana likes living along the Central Coast because she enjoys going to the beach, the nice weather, and that the winters here are usually not too cold. We would agree with that, Liliana. She would like to pursue science and art in high school and college, and after graduation, she would like to pursue a career as an actress. She loves to draw, act, read, play video games, write letters, and color. She's accompanied this evening by her teacher and all of her family, mom and dad and sister Sammy, and I think great-grandma, correct? So, mom and dad, don't be shy to come up and get pictures. But, Liliana, are you ready?
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you, and I have something for you for coming down and being a good student and leading us in the pledge. Shake your hand again, and she's going to take her picture. So this is for you, and these are more school supplies, so I'm going to shake everyone else's hand.
Thank you very much for my seat up. Mm-hmm.
Please be seated. Keep up the great work, Liliana. Okay, Donna, when you're ready, roll call, please.
Yes. Here.
Here.
Here. Thank you, Donna. With that, city attorney, can you cover our closed session announcements?
Certainly. Honorable Mayor, council members, and members of the public, on Tuesday, January 19th, after meeting in closed session regarding three items, first one being the conference of real property negotiators, second one, conference of legal counsel pertaining to anticipated litigation, the last one, public employment for the position of the city manager. City council will be convening to open session and announce that there will be no reportable action taken.
Thank you, City Attorney. So we're going to move on to agenda review. This is where the council will review the order of the agenda as presented by staff, and we'll determine if we want to make any changes to the order of the agenda. Do any members of the council want to change the order of the agenda? If not, is someone prepared to make a motion?
So moved.
Second.
There's a motion and a second. All in favor? Aye. All opposed? None. Motion carries. So we are going to proceed with the agenda as distributed. I believe there are extra copies on the table back there where Chief Peters is. So with that, we're going to move on to our ceremonial calendar tonight. And the first item is introduction of new police department employee. And let me bring forward Police Chief John Peters. Mr. Peters, you have the floor.
Honorable Mayor and members of the council and the community, thank you very much. It's my distinct pleasure tonight to bring forward the four new employees and two promotional employees that we've had within the police department over the last couple of months. I'm going to go ahead and use the microphone so I can turn to see everybody and give us a floor.
And I might say that this is apparently the safest place in the city of Grover Beach tonight with all this law enforcement in the room.
Okay. Can you hear me? Very well. Okay, the first employee, the new employee we want to bring up tonight is Ms. Carly Payne. Ms. Payne joined the police department in December of 2015 as a communication and records technician. She was one of 30 applicants that tested for the position and went through the extensive process, a background process, and all the testing, and was chosen. And she has joined the department and works in our emergency communications center. Ms. Payne comes to us from, she's lived here since 2010 on the Central Coast, but originally from Riverside, California, and she has a bachelor's degree in history. Ms. Payne, would you please come forward? Okay, and the next employee I want to introduce is a promotion from the rank of sergeant to the rank of commander. And this individual has been with the Grover Beach Police Department for quite a long time, 18 years. Commander Angela Lamone is a 22-year veteran of law enforcement with the last 18 years here in Grover Beach. Prior to his recent promotion to commander, Angela was a patrol sergeant for over 10 years for the police department. Commander Lamone has a bachelor's degree in social sciences and has lived on the Central Coast for 18 years. May I introduce Commander Angela Lamone. Our next promotion that we had recently is Sergeant Sonny Gerber. Sergeant Gerber is a 16-year law enforcement veteran with the last 9 years in the Grover Beach Police Department. Prior to his recent promotion, Sonny worked as a detective for the police department, where he investigated all of the department's major cases. Sergeant Gerber is an instructor at the Allen Hancock Police Academy and has lived on the Central Coast for the last 9 years. Mr. Sergeant Sonny Gerber. The next employee I would like to introduce you is a new employee to the department. He comes with a lot of experience from the Valley area in the city of Exeter. This is Sergeant Celise Rabina. Sergeant Rabina is a 19-year law enforcement veteran who recently joined the Grover Beach Police Department after serving the last 17 years with the Exeter Police Department. In his role at the Exeter Police Department, he was a field training officer, detective sergeant, and lieutenant. Sergeant Rabina brings a vast amount of experience and knowledge and training to the Grover Beach Police Department. We're very fortunate to have stolen his experience and knowledge away from the Valley and brought it here to the coast. Sergeant Rabina has a bachelor's degree in criminal law management. Sergeant Celis Rabina. Next is our new employee, and this is his first day on the job. So. David Arias, Officer David Arias was, like I said, this is his first day on starting his career, first day on the job for law enforcement. He's a native of Visalia. There we go. I had to double check my notes. But and he comes to the Grover Beach Police Department after just recently graduating from Tulare Kings County Police Academy. Is it Thursday, right? We drove up there and saw a great graduation ceremony where Officer Arias graduated from that class. So please welcome Officer David Arias. And our next new employee to introduce to you in the community is Officer Matthew Montero. Matthew, this is also his first day. He was a graduation classmate with Officer Arias, both graduating from the Tulare Kings County Academy this last Thursday. Officer Montero joins us from Tulare, right? Yes. He's from Tulare, and he has a bachelor's degree in ag business and criminology. So, Officer Matthew Montero. Okay, at this point in the ceremony, what we do is we have a swearing-in ceremony. They all take their oath, raising their right hand, and repeating after me, and then after that they will have their badge pinning ceremony with one of their family members giving them their badges. Everybody ready?
We're listening.
Please raise your right hand and repeat after me. I state your name.
I, Dan Miller.
Do solemnly swear
That I will support and defend. The Constitution of the United States.
The Constitution of the United States.
And the Constitution of the State of California.
And the Constitution of the State of California.
Against all enemies, foreign and domestic.
Against all enemies, foreign and domestic.
That I will bear true faith and allegiance.
That I will bear true faith and allegiance.
To the Constitution of the United States.
And the Constitution of the United States.
And the Constitution of the State of California.
And the Constitution of the State of California.
That I take this obligation freely.
That I take this obligation freely.
Without any mental reservation.
Without any mental reservation.
Or purpose of evasion.
Or purpose of evasion.
And that I will well and faithfully.
And that I will well and faithfully.
Discharge the duties upon which I'm about to enter.
Discharge the duties upon which I'm about to enter.
Congratulations. Okay, now we will have the badge pinning, and Angelo, who would you like to have pin you?
I'd like to invite my wife, Allison.
You may have to step down so she can pin.
Congratulations. Sergeant Gerber, who would you like to have?
My wife, Candace, and my son.
Sergeant Rabina?
My wife, Denise.
Denise? Officer Arias?
My mother's Elliot.
And Officer Montero?
My mother, Miriam.
Hey guys, stay there. We're going to come around.
Take a picture.
Okay.
Right.
that does conclude my presentation.
Thank you, Chief Peters. And I was actually going to ask him to stay through public communications, but I know you've got a lot to do tonight, so get to work. Very good. So we're going to move on to our public communications. This is an opportunity for any member in the community to address the council for a period not to exceed 3 minutes on any item within the jurisdiction of this council. Please bear in mind that the council will listen, but we cannot take any action on any item not on the agenda. Is there anyone that would like to come forward and address the council during public communications on any item not on the agenda?
Linda McClure with American Property Services and Grover Beach United. Just want to let everybody know that we have found a new location right on Grand Avenue. We will be moved by April 1st, and it's the big building there on 7th and Grand, where it was the mattress place. It was Mid-State Bank at one time. So it's kind of like going home for me because it was my second location that I ever had. So we're real happy about that. We're going to have both real estate, insurance. We have possibly a mobile home property that's going to be, you know, selling the little things in case El Nino really does come. And then we're going to do a couple more things. We have maintenance, et cetera. So we're looking really forward to this. We're going to be bringing in a bunch of new real estate agents that have knowledge of our area, that love our area. That's one of the first criteria. You've got to love Grover Beach, okay? And they can sell other places, but they got to love Grover and stuff like we do. So just wanted you to know that we're really excited. We're really happy. I'll be doing the permit over here pretty quick and stuff, but I did call ahead of time to make sure that it's still able to do what we're going to do. And that was a great ceremony, by the way, guys. We'll be putting those pictures up in our new office. Thank you.
Very good. Thank you, Ms. McClure. Is there anyone else?
Hello, I'm Danielle Allen, and I'm actually here representing Grover Beach Elementary School. We were visited not too long ago by Councilmember Jeff Lee and Karen Wright, and they invited us that anything going on in our school to come, let the council know and let the community know. So I asked our principal, because we're directed by our principal, James Snyder, and we service over 500 children at our school, and I asked him, was there something that he wanted me to bring and inform? So he gave me a list. And I'm going to go over it. So like I said, we have dedicated staff from our principal down to our teachers and janitorial staff. And we have a lot of programs that we do. We have our GATE program that offers robotics. And last year, our GATE students competed with San Luis Obispo and Santa Barbara counties in a GATE Olympics, and they won third place. So we're really proud of them. We just have a homework club that started, and we're able to service our upper grades right now with the funding. Let me see. What else do we have? We just partnered with the Children's Creative Project, so all of our students are getting some kind of art instruction at their level. And the next thing we have, we just started our Go-Go Run Club that was initiated by some parents. And what it is each morning students can walk or jog around the playground, and so we're opening that up so they get the healthy and lifestyle at the beginning. So all of that we're doing, and it's funded by, of course, the Lucio Mar School District, which we're proud to say that we are the only grammar school IB school in Lucio Mar School District, and we're very proud of that. And with that, we do a lot of fundraising. So one of the fundraisings we have going on is February 19th, 20th, and 21st. We're collaborating with Goodwill Industries, and we're doing a trailer field donation drive. So anybody in the community can come donate their treasures, and we'll be at the school filling as many trailers, as much trailers as we can fill, the more money we can raise. And that does go to our transportation, that for field trips and some of these programs that we have going on from 10 to 4 at the school. So we invite everybody to come donate and help us support our school and our students. Thank you.
Very good. Thank you, Ms. Allen. Is there anyone else that would like to address the council during public communication? Please come forward.
Good evening. My name is Daniela Cerati. I am also a member of PTO at Grover Beach Elementary, and I come here this evening to invite you, the council, City Council, and our community to participate in our spring collection of box tops and labels for education fundraiser. I would like to mention that last year the winning class got to take the principal, Mr. Snyder, to the cafeteria wall, and this year the winning class will be paying the principal, which consists of getting a, you know, whipped cream pie. And another, I wanted to also mention that for every box top that we collect, we get 10 cents towards our school. And during our 2015 fall contest, our school generated a solid $1,110 for our school, and we placed second place locally. We're really proud of that. I wanted to mention that. So if you can just drop off any box tops or labels for education at our school office, which is located at 365 South 10th Street between Long Branch and Seabright. If you have any questions, please call us at 474-3770, or you can also check us out on Facebook. By participating in this fundraiser, you're helping our school purchase needed classroom supplies, playground equipment, and it also pays for field trips and transportation, and also as many of the wonderful new programs that we have that Danielle Allen has just previously mentioned. So. And so the contest starts today, and it ends February 26th. Thank you very much for...
Thank you, Ms. Cerati. Was there anyone else?
I'm Donnie Lights on 1660 Brighton Avenue. Been up there too damn long. I was here on the 21st of December, and I said that I'm still having water problems, but you guys don't give a damn. So I come down to Miners a week ago, and I asked them if they had a good plumber. So they sent one up there, and I had him to take the floss off and throw it away, and a shower head throw it away, because that dirt from that line was still in there. So I give her a $200 statement. Now, I hope it's it, because I know, and I've been around long enough to know about plumbing. But, you know, I've played your game. I've done without water. It came down to a point where it just dribbled out. So, you know, I've used all these adjectives or adverbs or whatever they call them. And it's all over TV now about incompetent, irresponsible, corruption, crop, you know, and it's really sad that we have to live in the United States of America and have to go through this. I've lived here a long time, and I've never had anything so disgusting, so irritable, so dysfunctional as to have to live without water for 3 months, just letting it dribble. I was in the Korean War, and so for the last 4 months, I've been trying to get a hearing aid because I'm losing my hearing. Well, I'll tell you how corrupt this is, how stupid this United States is. They can't find in the United States Army that I was ever in there. And they can't find in the archives of St. Louis, Missouri that I was in. And you know where the hell it's at now? The FBI. Now, that is really dysfunctional United States of America. Because I can get it for them. I got it right there at home. They can go to Fort Benjamin Harris, where I went in, and the American Legion knows it. I'm just telling you how damn stupid and dumb. Today, I called Feinstein and Boxer's office. And you know what? The little girls couldn't spell Brighton Avenue. They could ask me how to spell John. Isn't that wonderful? I had two girls going through college. One's got one more year. But boy, they can spell John.
Thank you, Mr. Weissong. Is there anyone else? Yes, please come forward.
Mr. Mayor, Council, staff, I'd like to express my thanks and admiration for the job that you've done with the homeless situation that we've had near the train station. I really appreciate the effort, and I think it's very thoughtful. I think that you've done a good job so far, and there's more to do, I know, and I know it's complex, but I wanted to offer my thanks. And also to say, if you have an opportunity to go to coffee with the police, excellent. The chief is well informed, and it's very enlightening. So thank you very much.
Thank you for those comments. Is there anyone else?
Evening, Council. Dr. Daniel Bronstein, 902 West Grand. I would like to thank you guys for taking a hard line on the issues that we're having with regards to homeless encampments in the city. I'd like to echo my colleague's comments that I know that it's very complex, and I'm attempting to be as patient as possible. I would like to let you guys know that I am trying to meet you halfway, the best I can. We just installed $4,000 worth of security cameras on my property. We've changed out all of our security so that we can at least try to be at least transparent with what's going on. We're still having major issues with vandalism on my property. It's not something that is really going away, even with the eviction that happened last week. But we're trying to cooperate the best we can. I'm really happy to see that we were able to bring on some new police officers in the area. We know that has been a difficult thing to deal with. I'm talking with some of my neighbors between 9th and 10th. There are still some pretty considerable issues that we're having to deal with, not the least of which is the leaving of human waste in our property. It is a bit of a public health issue. As a matter of fact, I think some of you guys know that we had an issue about 3 weeks ago where we had a person in broad daylight defecate out on the sidewalk in the city. So I just ask that you guys still sort of keep your noses to the grindstone and really kind of help us. I know there's going to be a task force that's coming up with the Chamber of Commerce, and I would hope that you guys would take the lead and start working with the Chamber so the business owners' voices are continually heard through this. Additionally, I haven't heard anything yet. It may be on the agenda, but I know I'd asked last year to have another business meeting with the City Council. I'm hoping that would happen sometime between now and March. Thank you.
Thank you for those comments. Is there anyone else? Okay, seeing no one come forward, I'm going to close public communication. But I do want Dr. Bronstein, I want to say thank you for coming and making those comments and giving us that update. And yes, we haven't gotten on the agenda. We are going to have a follow-up meeting. And then also I would say contact me maybe later this week. I want to give you an update. We've been working with the Chamber. There's some things that you and I had a conversation about. And I want to just give you an update on that. So we really appreciate everyone coming down. Everyone's views and comments and opinions are important to us. And we know that government doesn't work as fast as we'd like it to sometimes. But I think we're trying to do the best we can. So we appreciate you coming in. So with that, we are now going to move to our public hearings for the night. This is item number 3 on the agenda. This is an introduction and first reading of a proposed ordinance to amend the Grover Beach Municipal Code. This is dealing with changing regulations regarding special events. Police Chief Peters, you have the floor.
Thank you. Honorable Mayor, members of the council and the community, we bring before you the special events and outdoor assembly ordinance amendment. This is one that's been in process for a while, and we had an open discussion in first reading previously to tonight. Going on what we discussed at the last meeting and what was presented to the staff by the community and the council, we do have some adjustments and some amendments moving forward. The ordinance, as directed, all demonstration references were removed. The term vendor was actually clarified by two different definitions, one's being a sales vendor, the other one being a service vendor, and that is in relation to when the ordinance now calls for not agreements or contracts, but actually a list of vendors, then it will be easier to provide instead of providing actual contracts that they have to sign. The financial statement requirement was changed
to an event budget submission. So that's just an estimation of if somebody's had an event previously, they know what their budget was the prior year, they can kind of project what it would be this for the next event. So instead of needing financial documents other than the nonprofit status document, we would just need an event budget. Continuing on, language in 3976 was changed, allowing fundraising with preliminary approval. And you'll remember that there was another section that kind of was verbatim to that. I believe it was 3984. That section has been removed completely. This now allows fundraising to begin and promotional opportunities to begin with the preliminary approval by the city manager. Also, staff has 30 days to complete from the time they receive the application to the time that the city manager issues a preliminary approval. That process must occur within 30 days. If it does not occur within 30 days, this is a new portion that the applicant, the event organizer, can appeal directly to the city council. So that, I believe, would address your concerns that you had. What were the repercussions if staff didn't meet the time deadlines? Well, here now it will be appealed directly to this body. New insurance requirements through some more communication with our insurance provider and CJPIA. We did look at surety bonds and the necessities of those, and it was determined that if we just changed a little bit of the language in our insurance requirements, we still maintained the $1 million for every $500 requirement, then we would not need a surety bond at all, and those requirements have since been removed. The process for filling out the ordinance is getting easier. What we have developed, and it's in draft form, is an easy to follow flow chart. Starts from as soon as you fill out the application and turn it in, what would be expected of the event organizer as well as staff to process that application. Included in that was an info sheet on the application and the permit application itself. So, and those are currently in rough draft form, as obviously once we move to the final approval of this, we can finalize the drafts. So tonight it is recommended the City Council consider public testimony introduced and conduct this first reading, or the continued first reading of the ordinance by title only, and schedule a second reading and adoption at the next regularly scheduled meeting. Any questions or comments?
Well, first, let me just say, Chief, excellent staff report. I think people have heard me make comments up here, and I want to make sure people understand that your staff report was concise, it was clear, you addressed the comments that the council had made had talked about last time, and that gives us that continuity from the last meeting to tonight. So I just want to say very well done. So I do want to start ask you a question, and maybe city attorney can weigh in on this. It looks like we received a letter from the American Civil Liberties Union of Southern California, and I wasn't sure if you had had a chance to review that or if the city attorney had reviewed that and if you had any response to the letter that was submitted to us.
Thank you, Honorable Mayor, Council members. The letter was emailed to the city at 4 o'clock this evening. I have reviewed it, and at this point in time, I do not find anything in there that would cause me to change direction on the staff's recommendation.
Very good.
Okay. I would also point out that that letter addresses a few items, such on page 3 in the item number 2 that's continued from page 2. These items have already actually been addressed in the changing of the ordinance, so some of this material is not up to date with this current version.
Okay, very good. Let's see if the other council members have questions. So let me start with Councilmember Nichols. Do you have any questions of the chief or the city attorney?
No, I commend you on getting it tidied up so promptly and support getting back to us with it.
Thank you.
Okay. Mayor Pro Tem.
Thank you. I just had two quick questions. And in section 3980, the appeal of the application denial. So I know we you spent some time and kind of laid out the appeal by the applicant. Do we, and maybe this is a question for the council, or was there a consideration or for an appeal by someone other than the applicant, like a neighbor or something of that nature, or would that be basically an appeal of the permit itself towards the council?
And,
go ahead.
Yeah, thank you. I think that an appeal of someone other than the applicant would occur only after a permit has been issued or a hearing on the permit has been done, so that there would be some type of final action by either the chief or the city manager or his designee, which would give rise to an appeal of that decision to the council.
Which would be under our administrative
normal
process.
Right.
So it doesn't need to
and
be...
And actually the process are the same. So,
So it doesn't need to be specifically in here.
No.
And then my only other question had to do, and perhaps I just missed it, was the fees. So is that coming forward at a separate time, or is that included in here somewhere, and I just overlooked it?
The fees will be coming forward on the adjustment of the master fee schedule.
Right. Okay.
All city fees are not listed in any of the ordinances. They're listed in the master fee schedule.
Right. Okay. Just wanted to confirm. So that's all I had.
Okay. Councilmember Shaw.
Yes, thank you. I think, to me, this is a lot clearer, especially, when I read the ordinance and then I read the application and the flow chart, it made sense. I think just so that I understand, just because I'm coming at it with a new eye as an applicant would, so this application for special event permit, this would be the preliminary permit that you fill out. Is that right?
You would fill out the application form, mm-hmm. and then turn that application form in with the supporting documentation that you have up to that point, and then staff would review that. Once the review and the preliminary approval was given, then that packet done comes back to the applicant again, the event organizer, with staff's list of what is still required, mm-hmm. and what fees and everything is required. And then it is up to the event organizer to bring the rest of that needed material back for the final approval. But now they have a longer period to do that, mm-hmm. and in that time period they can also acquire their promotional items.
So the hope is that, and I think the process is, you fill out this application, and let's say someone really doesn't have much supporting information, but really they just fill out the application and check the yes, no, that's enough. And then they can, within the 30 days, they can get their preliminary?
Yes.
Okay.
They'd be able to get their preliminary information. If it's a small event, then there may not be a whole lot of items needed from to the city anymore. So
okay.
Their preliminary could be pretty quick.
Okay. Yeah. And just one other question. In section 3976, I see, and I know we talked about this, you guys took out the part that says no person shall sponsor, operate, maintain, or conduct, or promote. And you took out the promote, which I agree with because, why hold people back from promoting? But then there's still a line that says promotion of an outdoor assembly or a special event to be held in the city is permitted after the preliminary application. Which I think is probably reasonable. I just kind of wanted to go over the fact that if we're taking out the fact that you don't need to wait to promote, I mean, is it really a danger that someone promotes early on? Isn't it their money to waste if they don't get the application?
Well, the promotion aspect that's listed in that section is promotion is possible after the preliminary approval. And that's consistent throughout the ordinance. What you would not want somebody to do is probably advertise an event prior to even the preliminary approval, because then if it gets denied, they've wasted advertising dollars for something that was denied.
And I think more importantly, one of the concerns in drafting this language was obviously it's up to an individual if they want to spend money advertising for an event that's not going to happen. However, most likely the event would carry the city's name in it.
Mm.
And having city's name out there promoting an event or being part of the event promotion for an event that then doesn't occur could expose the city at minimum to people calling up and saying, what are you guys doing? You know, you were promoting this event, because they lose track of who's promoting as long as it says Grover Beach or has a seal on it. So that's a little bit of protection also for the city.
Okay. Yeah, well, then that makes sense. Thank you.
And if I could just add to that, because I was actually thinking of the very same thing, and I actually had written delete in my draft, so thank you for that clarification. I was also thinking if someone started promoting and people had an expectation there was an event, not so much that the city would be considered a promoter, but they would be promoting an event, and if they didn't follow through, then we are going to have to kind of deal with some of the impacts that would come with it. I mean, I see that. As long as it's not so late in the process that it puts the organizer of an event at a disadvantage. So I think I'm okay with that. So I do want to ask the question regarding, I'm still, the only thing, this, the outdoor assembly language, and I know that this is language that was in the existing ordinance coming forward, and I know we talked about taking out all the language regarding demonstration, so I'm still trying to come to grips or trying to figure out, does it really make sense for us to sit here and try and have someone come and get a permit to do a political rally, because I see that on page 2, section J, it does say that outdoor assembly includes, but is not limited to, social service events, entertainment events, music festivals, religious revivals, and political rallies. And so I still have, and this is probably more of a, I'll make this a question, so I'm just curious if staff had given that any consideration, or is there a different clarification on that, because I'm trying to distinguish what's the difference between demonstration and outside assembly or outdoor assembly.
Yeah, and I think two things. First of all, by having both of those in the ordinance, that there was a differentiation made to the demonstration, whether or not it was supportable, and council decided to take it out,
yeah,
which was the right decision, and I think we followed your direction.
No, you absolutely did.
The outdoor assembly, I think, is necessary in this section of the ordinance. It is content neutral. I mean, it gives some examples, but it's obviously not limited. And as long as the regulation is content neutral, then I think it withstands scrutiny. And I'm comfortable with the language as drafted in section 3957J.
Okay, very good. And just to clarify, we're talking about an event over 100 people or more. Anything less would not have to go through this process. Okay, I just want to make sure everyone knows that that's clear. The question of the non-refundable deposit, this was brought up in the ACLU letter, and I had actually had targeted, I had seen that before I saw this letter, and I'm just wondering, is there a better way for us to do this so someone deposits their money, we're going to track it, and so if there are our services that have been provided, that money is spent. So now I want to, you know, I think for us, we need to decide if that's something we want to go down that road, because I know there's one part of depositing money, and then there's the other side of trying to identify what are the potential impacts of holding this event and making sure that the city's not left on the hook, or I say city, the taxpayers are not left on the hook for having to clean up after an event. So I'm just wondering, have you guys given that any thought or discussion?
The non-refundable deposit, which is set out in 39771, is a deposit for the staff's review of the initial application. In other words, we get a set of paperwork from an applicant, which we need to review expeditiously and return to them with a answer as whether this is a good to go, move forward with starting to prepare the event, or whether we have some serious issues with it. So it is not, I don't foresee that to be a large deposit, but it's non-refundable because it's going to be spent the moment we review the submittal and return an answer to the applicant. So
would it help to provide, I think that's a great explanation and clarification of that, because I see exactly where you're going with this, and I don't know if that's something we might be interested in providing in the document, just to provide a clarification.
We can surely put that in the
in the flow chart as well as the informational packet that gets handed to the event organizer.
Okay, so
or if the council desires, we can change it to a basically each application shall be accompanied by a review fee.
Okay.
Which is basically will set a certain amount, and this way you're not talking about a deposit or refundable or non-refundable. It's a review fee. You pay $200 to have staff spend 2-3 hours reviewing your paperwork and giving you an answer to your question.
Okay.
And the fee is basically paid, and there's no question that it's not subject to being returned. So that's another option.
Okay. So then let's all we'll hold that thought because I know we're just asking questions now for the council when we come back and have some discussion on this. Let's keep that in mind. And then I think two other things. So there was a reference about lack of an exception to paying fees, and I think this is really already covered right under our fee system. If it's a nonprofit organization, they have the ability to come to the council and request a waiver, correct?
Yeah, except this ordinance now puts that ability to the city manager can make that decision.
Okay, and that's a nice segue because my last question really is, while this ordinance in an attempt to streamline the process, does in fact still say we still have the ability if the city manager, if someone is not happy with the city manager's decision, and if they haven't waived the ability, they can still appeal to the city council, correct?
Yes, they can.
Okay. So I think we've addressed many of those points, so thank you very much. So with that, let me open this up to the public and see if anyone has got any comments. I have one speaker request form from Ms. Linda McClure. Linda, come forward, please.
First of all, I want to make sure everybody at the council knows that I express my gratitude because you guys have done a great job. It kind of came off, I think, after I watched it that I was just thanking Jeff here because he was so one-on-one with me and stuff, and that's not it. Kathy and the chief had done amazing. There's nothing in this new one that we don't agree with. The attorney just kind of scared me when he said 200 because we were talking about 75 to 100, which Pismo Beach is 67, I believe it is, and Rio Grande's somewhere under 100.
He just offered that as an example.
I know, but I just wanted to make sure. This is what we were looking for. This is going to be simple. This is going to be easy. We're going to be able to go out there, get the sponsors. Grover Beach United, just from your approval of last month to allow us to go forward, we've gotten $1,500 promised to us already and a bunch more coming in. So we thank you for that. This is great. I do want to make a couple of comments that I should have made when I was up here the first time. I've been really easygoing on the homeless because you never know when it's you. Until I got two tickets in the mail that said Linda McClure, one sleeping in public and one camping on private property. It took us about an hour in my office to figure out what had I done. And I had to go to court tomorrow. But thanks to the chief and everybody, they made sure I didn't have to go to court. A homeless person used my name. Two tickets. Okay? And I knew who it was going to be because it was the only person crazy enough to use my name. And they showed me a picture. Thank God they have their little cameras on them. We really need to do something. There's a lot of people coming to Grover Beach United now asking us to help on that. So you guys are doing great. Let's keep going. Let's get this under control like you have been.
Great.
Thank you.
Thank you, Linda. I was going to bring you back to the subject in front of us, but appreciate those comments. Thank you for making it quick. Actually, you were well within your time limits, so I'm happy to accommodate that. Is there anyone else that would like to address the item before the council?
Howdy. Good evening. Tom Rader, Mongo Saloon, Grover Beach United. Thank you for working on the paper. We look forward to putting the event on and working with the city to make this our third and our most successful event to date. If there's anything else that comes up, I know I'd like to talk to you about some other things we can do for fundraising. But I know that right now is not the right time to do that. So I look forward to contacting you in the future. Thank you.
Very good. Thank you, Tom. Is there anyone else? Did you need a mic, Sharon? Okay. So let's make sure that one's working, Chief. Oh, hang on a sec.
Sharon Beach, or Sharon Brown, resident of Grover Beach. I've listened to this now for several times. The chief and his staff have done a wonderful job. I agree with that. The only comment I wanted to make, we know what special events we have right now. I think what we want to make sure with this ordinance is that it will apply to anyone else that comes in. Are we sure that we are safeguarded? We know what to expect from those we have. We like that. But we want to make sure that this ordinance does apply to anybody coming in, from L.A. or wherever.
Very good. Thank you, Ms. Brown. Linda, you have... Okay. Okay. This is on the topic in front of us, right?
Yes.
Okay.
The one thing in there that I noticed, we asked that nonprofits have a shorter deadline to get out there. Mm-hmm. I was just told the other day by the city that nonprofits doesn't include the, or the special events don't include the 4th of July, but it should. That's a special event. I mean, it's not every year. It's once a year. So could we get that put in there so we can do this year? Bye.
Thank you. Since I opened it back up to Ms. McClure, did anyone who spoke before her like to come back? Okay. I want to be fair to everyone. Okay. So I'm going to close public comment, bring it back to the council. Thank you for that. Police chief, city manager, someone jump in here. Is that correct? Celebration of 4th of July would not fall into this permitting process?
Well, the city attorney and police chief may correct me if I'm wrong, but it depends, I would think, on who the sponsoring agency is. If it's a government agency or a nonprofit that's recognized within the ordinance, then it wouldn't have to come through this kind of a process.
Well,
4th of July is a national holiday. If somebody was putting on an event connected to 4th of July, they would have to go through this process. And all of the provisions would be applicable to that. But just 4th of July is not a assembly or a special event or anything else like that. So there would need to be an identified applicant that has an identified event that is related presumably to 4th of July or takes place on 4th of July. And in those instances, that would apply.
Okay. So you guys can tell who's the attorney in the room, right? and I would agree with that. That is with that determination. So you have something you want to add?
I think I've just been told that Ms. McClure is referring to fireworks and fireworks booths, but those are covered under a separate.
That would be a separate. That is correct. Okay.
That's not an event.
That is not an event.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. We're good. So let's have some discussion with the council. I think the only thing that, in my mind, that's hanging out there is this whole discussion regarding non-refundable deposits. And I think the city attorney suggested a possible change. City attorney, if the council was inclined to make that change tonight, with this, would you then have to come back and we do this first reading all over again?
No, it's a minor change, just definitional. It doesn't change the meaning of the ordinance or in fact what's going to happen. Just calling it something different.
Okay. So let's see. So Miriam, any comments? Any further discussion?
I would be fine with that change, especially if we could put a set dollar amount. I think it's always better for people to know what they're getting into.
And with regard to, if I may, I apologize,
yes.
Mayor, Council members. With regard to the amount, unless it's the intent of the council to subsidize the process from the general fund, the amount will be set by the amount of work that staff will review, basically what is necessary, how much time it's going to take, and then we'll bring to your resolution, which will adopt the fee through the master fee schedule. We don't put fees in our code because they're subject to change and they would have to be changed through an ordinance process. Instead, we have a master fee schedule that's changed by resolution, a single hearing. Fees for this type of work have to reflect the cost of services provided. So if it takes us 3 hours to review the application,
And if city staff's average rate is $50 an hour, then the fee will be $150. If it's something different, it will be something different. We'll bring it to you for your approval. If at that time you decide to do something different with it, you'll have an opportunity to do that.
I guess okay. That made me a little more confused.
So,
what would a person just filing the very preliminary application pay, or they wouldn't know that until after they file?
No, what will happen? Assuming that the staff, that council moves forward with the ordinance, staff will evaluate the amount of time necessary and the process by which to evaluate that initial submission. It'll bring to you a master fee schedule amendment, which will reflect that amount. And I don't know, Mr. Cunningham and I have not gotten together on this. It's going to be based on how many hours of time it's going to take somebody to review it and what their rate of pay is. And it's not a complicated formula. I can't tell you what that amount is going to be right now. We'll bring it to you along with the justification for the amount when we bring your resolution to amend the master fee schedule.
So people will know when
people
they file.
People will know before they file how much it's going to be. It'll probably be before you, before the second, or at the same time the second reading comes to you.
Thank you.
Okay. Councilmember Nichols.
No, I'm quite satisfied with that little change, and the rest of it I think is fine.
Very good. Mayor Pro Tem Leaf.
And I'm in concurrence as well.
Okay. I think my only comment would be is perhaps we change the wording to say that there will be a deposit that will be used for fees or something to that effect, as opposed to saying non-refundable, right? I think just...
And the wording that I was recommending would be, again, under Section 39771, where it says deposit. Each application shall be accompanied by a review fee as set forth in a master fee schedule.
Okay, so would someone like to make a motion or have a discussion on it? I think that's some really good language, so we do, I think, have concurrence on the vast majority of this, and so does anyone want to make a motion given the language that is recommended by the city attorney?
I'll make a motion that we consider public testimony, introduce and conduct the first reading of the ordinance by title only, and schedule the second reading and adoption at the next regularly scheduled city council meeting.
And would that include the amendment to Section 3977, Section 1 under deposit, saying that it would be accompanied by a review deposit as
a review fee?
A review fee.
Taking out non-refundable.
As set forth. Okay.
Yes, it would. So, and then, go ahead.
No.
You
have the floor.
Second, and then have an element of discussion in the fact that do we want to add language that review fee would be applicable to the final application fee, assuming they move forward, something to that effect. And that's probably getting too.
The review fee would be spent the moment we return to, so it wouldn't be applicable to anything.
Okay.
Yeah. Other than just the review.
Okay. So. Is that your motion?
I second the motion as amended.
Okay. So there is a motion by Mayor Pro Tem Lee and a second by Councilmember Nichols. If there's no additional discussion, we'll do a roll call.
Yes.
Yes. Yes.
Yes. And again, I want to compliment Chief Peters and Ms. Patker, nice job. Let's move on to our consent agenda. This is where the council considers a list of items, and they're considered as a group. We have four tonight, and this is items 4, 5, 6, and 7 on the agenda. One is the Treasury Report for the period of January 14th through January 26, 2016. Another is a Treasury Report for the Streets Bond Account Measure for the same time period. The third are the minutes of a special City Council meeting on November 30, 2015. And then finally, there is a records destruction authorization. Do any members of the council want to pull anything from consent?
Not I.
Very good. And I don't have any requests from the public to speak. So is this someone prepared to make a motion on this item?
I'll make a motion that we accept the consent agenda as written.
Second.
Okay, there is a motion and a second. I believe this is a roll call vote as well.
Yes.
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 Yes. So what I would like to do is exercise the chair's prerogative, and I know we have this conversation about changing something, order on the agenda, but I know that the item that's coming up would be the mid-year budget review. I'm looking at item number 9. I suspect that we have some folks in the audience who are here and interested in speaking on the potential uses of affordable housing funds. So with the concurrence of the council, I would like to move forward with item 9 now and then come back to item 8.
All right.
Okay. Oh, okay. I was going to say I saw the community development director leave the room. I was going to say I thought I was nice when I said that. So, Mr. Buckingham and Ms. Reese, you have the floor.
Good evening, Mayor, members of the council. As you know, the council has several policies that support the creation of affordable housing in the city. Staff typically provides an annual update on the funds available from the Community Development Block Grant Program, or CDBG, as well as our affordable housing funds. Last year, the funding was basically limited to CDBG funds because the city was awaiting repayment of an affordable housing loan that was we had to make to the state that we had to we finally got repaid on from the former improvement agency. So the purpose of tonight's meeting is to provide council a summary of available affordable housing funds and seek direction from the council on the use of those funds. Staff has contacted the as many or the known local affordable housing advocates requesting that they do provide information tonight to the council. There are two sources of funds available for housing projects, basically the Housing Successor Agency Fund, the predecessor from the Improvement Agency and the Low-Moderate Income Housing Fund, as well as CDBG funds. The Housing Successor Agency Housing Fund, or as Housing Fund as we're referring to it, currently has about $268,000 and is scheduled to receive another $50,000 next fiscal year, which will bring the balance up to about $315,000. The housing agency also owns two properties located at 920 South 10th Street and 1541 Hillcrest, which, if sold in the future, would add additional funds to the housing fund. These housing funds that we're talking about from the successor agency are unrestricted. There's no time constraints on when those funds can be used to support low and moderate income housing projects. The second source of funds is currently the $186,000 in CDBG funds that were awarded in 2014 for the acquisition of the entitled, at the time, five-unit low-income housing project at 920 South 10th Street. Subsequently, though, as you know, the CDBG staff determined that the funds could not be used by the city to acquire that site, and so they've kind of remained in limbo since then. The use of the CDBG funds are restricted, and these funds were acquired specifically to or for the acquisition of vacant land or an existing project with five or more units, which CDBG defines as multifamily residential projects, five or more. These funds must be expended by September 30th, 2016, if the funds are used to be if the funds are used for construction. They need to be expended for vacant land acquisition by September 30th, 2016. If they were used to acquire vacant land then and you had to build a project, you have two additional years, is our understanding, for September 30th, 2018. So you got to use the funds, but if you are going to acquire vacant land, you have 2 years to actually construct, and the units have to be occupied. So, with only 9 months left to use the CDBG funds, a decision must be made soon on how to use those funds. If the council determines there is not a viable project for using the $186,000 on that activity that they're specified for, the multifamily residential project, if you determine you can't use it on that project, then you can transfer the funds to another eligible activity within CDBG. So in the staff report, as you saw, we provided several eligible CDBG programs that the funds could be transferred to, such as housing assistance, public service, and public facilities. But absent any specific input tonight, staff would recommend they be transferred to the homeownership assistance program, in part because staff is already implementing really the same program with the home funds that we have received. So we have $350,000 of home funds that are have been dedicated for that use. So this would allow the CDBG funds to be used and provide the council more time to determine the use of those housing funds, which again have much more flexibility. It's also important to note that the city has not been able to apply for CDBG funds in the last few years because we have not spent the majority of the current grant. So if you recall, we received $1.8 million 3 years ago. $1.5 million of that was public facilities, the installation of the water lines. That project is going to be completed this year, and therefore we will be eligible to apply for next year's round of funding. That notice of funding availability comes out in January. The council holds a public hearing to receive input, and at that point you then designate what you would like to submit those funds for by April of 2017. So to give you an idea, those fund amounts, because when we only got $200,000 for acquisition, it was because there was a specific project in mind, and we were also hitting up against the $1.8 million maximum. But just to give you an idea, you can potentially receive up to $1 million for housing projects, $500,000 for public services, and up to $1.5 million for public facilities. So opportunities exist for the city to receive significant funding in the future, but again, through that CDBG process. So tonight the council will likely hear from several nonprofit organizations with ideas on the potential use of funds. While the council should listen to these ideas, obviously, the council cannot make any decisions tonight, and the purpose of the meeting is not to evaluate the merits of potential projects. The council can ultimately determine, as discussed in the staff report, to use an RFP process to consider projects and provide criteria on how a future project might be selected to use the housing funds. So in conclusion, there's no urgency to use those housing funds. You can start that process of entertaining ideas on that. The urgency only exists for the use of the $186,000 in CDBG funds, which again need to be spent in the next 9 months. And because right now they're designated for a multifamily residential project, if you feel that there isn't an available project like that to spend the funds on in the next 9 months, you can then transfer that to one of the other CDBG eligible activities. If you do decide to transfer those funds, it does require a public hearing, and so the soonest that we would come back is on March 7th for the council to consider that transfer of the funds. So in conclusion, we're requesting the council allow for public comments tonight, discuss the options, and then give direction to staff, especially on the use of the CDBG dollars. That concludes staff's report.
Thank you, Bruce. Nice staff report. Let's see if there's any questions. Councilmember Nichols, you have any questions?
Oh, yes.
I can see all the green and orange highlights from over here.
The options are kind of mind-boggling to comprehend. So many of the things you are listing here, our staff is unaware of any potential projects for this use, that use, the other use. And when we're in such a housing crunch, that kind of boggles my mind. $186,000 isn't a whole lot to buy even an empty lot, is it?
Correct. And that's probably why. If this was $1 million, we probably, in conversations with the housing groups, they would have, I'll say, been motivated and obviously been able to leverage that for a lot more money. So $186,000 is not a lot. In response to, you know, we're unaware of projects, to give you an example on public facilities at least, you think, well, why couldn't we go out and even upgrade some of our existing public facilities? The monies could only be used for ADA improvements like we had with City Hall, if you recall. Okay. So it's not like we can go out and spend those monies, at least on Trueville or Ramona, and do upgrades or maintenance that needs to be done. So we've considered some of those limitations, and that's why we make that statement that we're not aware of, at least on public facilities.
Right,
more so.
Right. Okay. Yeah, that's a little more easy to understand. How about the housing rehabilitation for multifamily sites? Does it have to be five or more units, or in one? But it can be in one building, or is it five separate buildings that we're talking about?
It has to actually be one project that contains five or more multifamily units.
Okay. To what do you attribute the lack of interest in the improvements to owner or renter-occupied units?
Well, the current home grant that we have is $700,000,
right.
$350,000 for first-time home buyer assistance, basically down payment assistance, and then owner-occupied rehab. And so the consultant we have has been out, and we've, you know, advertised to the greatest extent possible. I think, you know, you have, first of all, owner-occupied, meaning they have to be qualified for low income. So right now, right away, your pool of potential owners goes down considerably. And then they've got to be qualified for low income, and they've got to want to do some kind of improvement to their house. And they have to ultimately have the equity in the house to do that as well.
Okay.
So far, and we did this several years ago with city funds, we ended up having 13 successful rehabs. So far, though, in the home program, we've only had four applicants, whereas in the first-time home buyers, we've had at least 12 people on the list currently, and we're now starting to qualify them as well. Mm-hmm. So there's just been more interest for that program.
Okay. I think that's about it for now.
Okay, very good. Mayor Pro Tem Lee.
Thank you for that. I just have one single question. On page 2 of the staff report, you say funds must be expended by September 30th unless an extension is granted. So who would grant the extension, and how long could it be for?
Well, the funds are managed by the Housing and Community Development Department. We haven't asked and we have a consultant assisting us with this whole process. You can always apply for an extension. I would think that the grounds for the extension would have to be something, you know, we're moving forward with this specific project, we were almost there, and now we need an additional 60 days. So I really don't know the odds of getting an approval, but it certainly is an option.
Okay. So if perchance somebody came forward this morning or this evening and said, hey, we'd like to partner with the city using those funds, but we won't have occupancy by 2018, the $186,000 for the purchase of the vacant land could be extended while they do what they need to do to develop plans and move forward with something of that nature, correct? I mean, that might be an opportunity where an extension could be granted or discussed.
Yeah. That question and others that may come up tonight, we may have to go back and get a definitive answer from the consultant. But our understanding is, though you might get an extension on the acquisition date of September 2016, getting extension beyond the 2 years, September 2018, is probably not as likely, because that's associated with, I believe, the closeout of that particular cycle.
Okay.
Councilmember Shaw.
Yeah, thank you for the, because I too thought, geez, don't we have a lot of public facilities that could use this? But that was a good clarification. So I think as I'm reading at least how I'm kind of categorizing the funds, there's about $316,000 that can go towards affordable housing that doesn't have so much of the time limit and the constraints, and then we have this $186,000 that we could pool or not to pool. And I guess I want to ask more questions since we kind of covered the public facility use. I want to ask about our constraints or what is meant by the public service, the homeless services, because we know we have this issue, and I'm just thinking if one of the nonprofits could come forward tonight or in 30 days or 60 days with some sort of project that could specifically help homeless in Grover Beach, particularly related to encampments, would that be something we could use the money for?
Yes, we think that there are programs, and I think the more specificity we can get tonight so that we can go back and clarify with our consultant, the better. One clarification in the staff report, we indicate that the public service monies can only be used by one organization. Our recollection is that's what the qualifications were under this NOFA and funding cycle that we received the money. But when we looked at the most recent one from 2015, it allowed it to be spread over three potential service providers. So we're going to need to get clarification on that, because if we could divide it amongst three rather than one, that might allow several of the organizations to come together and put together a more comprehensive program.
Okay, so we could possibly get some program that could, so people have been sending things to me particularly about programs where the homeless could work like a day job and a program where they could work and then possibly pay for housing at night, maybe a legal campsite at night. So if an organization could start such a program, particularly for Grover Beach, could that be something we could?
Again, I think there are possibilities, but as an example, one of the organizations that I spoke with had asked about rapid rehousing or eviction prevention, and we went immediately back to the consultant and asked him that, and no, that was not an eligible cost. So my sense is that the temporary housing would not be, but providing actual services, whether that's counseling or drug counseling, that those things may very well be eligible under that program.
Okay. And my other question is, just in my background on some of my committees, we've talked about the perfect site for affordable housing. We would need 0.5 acres to 1 acre where we could build about 20 units. Do you know of any such area in Grover Beach or anything that we could even touch with any combination of this money?
Of properties that are currently zoned residential, there's really only one that comes to mind, the Tanner property at Atlantic City and Oak Park Boulevard. The remaining lots, and I think that may come up tonight in some of the comments from the groups, that at best we've got some corner lots that might be 10 or 15,000 square feet. But
there's
not approaching, we basically need almost 1 acre to approach a 20-unit project.
And I know there's one area that's right now zoned commercial right at the gateway of the city on Highway 1 and Farrell.
4th Street and Farrell.
4th and Farrell.
4th and Farrell.
Right.
That's right. Would that
currently zoned industrial, and again, the council can direct a zone change at any time.
Okay. I think those were all my questions. Thank you.
So, Bruce, do you have a way to put these options up on the screen? Because I think there's three options laid out here. And
my apologies. No, I did not prepare that.
Okay. Okay, Mr. Buckingham. So You know, I'm going to hold my questions until after I hear from the...
I can put the staff report on the overhead is what our...
So is Ms. Well, I would say take page 3, fold it in half, put it on the overhead. So that would be helpful. We want to just make sure that there are more folks here than just the council and the people in the audience. There's people watching at home, and we want to make sure that they can see what are the options staff has laid out for the council to consider. Okay? And so while you do that, I'm going to, like I said, I'm going to hold my question. I think actually a couple of them have been asked already, so I'm going to open this up to the public. I have 2 speaker request forms. The first is from Morgan. Is it Benevito?
Yeah, that's correct.
And it is Morgan, right? Okay. I did that once. I read a name, and it was a guy, and I read it like it was a girl's name. So I just want to be
fine,
careful.
That's fine, Mayor. I would understand. Good evening, Mayor Schultz, member of City Council. Morgan Benevito with People's Self-Help Housing. I'm our multifamily housing director. I have spoken to your staff in the past several months ago about affordable housing in Grover Beach. A couple of your earlier speakers this evening commented on homelessness as a problem. Staff has identified it to us as a problem, and then it was mentioned again during this discussion. So it's something that we're aware of. So I want to kind of briefly go through what's before you and how we perceive it as an affordable housing provider in San Luis Obispo County. The CDBG, which is a short-term, we'll call it problem, where to put this money, I don't really have a good solution on the table for you at this moment. It's not like we have a piece of property we can say put it here. We have discussed with a local landowner possible acquisition of the property in the past. Those discussions kind of died out. It is possible that others, such as Habitat for Humanity or their members here from Family Care Network, that maybe can do a rehab with some sort of a triplex situation. That's not really what we do. We usually do larger projects. But the other issue is on your housing funds, which are the former RDA funds. That's something that we can leverage into a larger project. So we can take that funding, commit it to a project, leverage it using something like low-income housing tax credits or other funding sources, and get more investment in the community. So you take your $300,000-$400,000, perhaps we apply through staff to a state home program. We bring in a few million dollars, a couple more million dollars more tax credits. Before you know it, you have a project in the order of, like somebody said, about 20 units. It's tough for 20 units to pencil out. So we've been talking to staff about maybe an SRO project, which is a single room occupancy, which would be tailor-made for your homeless population, which would help alleviate some of that problem. And I won't spend too much time on the logistics of that. The other thing in the staff report was mentioned of the vacant land that you have, and at the time, council decided to kind of leave that as it is, and there wasn't any urgency behind that. I would urge the council to maybe revisit that because it could take a while to sell some land, and you can add it to your affordable housing fund, which would only enhance the ability of an applicant to actually do a project. There is one parcel I think is landlocked by some water towers. You know, who knows if that would actually sell. But the one off Farrell and 10th, probably a good candidate to sell. The reason I say sell is because it's about 7,000 or 8,000 square feet, not a lot of land to do a project, a couple units maybe. And I mentioned the SRO project, so we'd be happy to continue to work with staff and talk about possibilities in town. It was brought up that there's not a lot of land area for affordable housing or multifamily housing in this community. There are a couple spots, but before People's Self-Help Housing or really any applicant would invest a large amount of funding in acquiring property, going through an entitlement process, I guess we'd want the assurance from the city council and from staff that you're on board with what we're doing so that, you know, our investment, it pays off, pays dividends in the end, and we're not spending a lot of time and money on something that the community doesn't really want. Thank
you. Okay. And before you leave, I want to say I'm glad to see People's Self-Help Housing is here. I do have a question for you.
Sure.
Because I see you guys have done projects in Oceano, you do projects in Guadalupe, you do projects all around Grover Beach, but never in Grover Beach.
Right.
So someone should have given you a heads up on that one.
What?
So is there a minimum number of units that your organization must have to get involved? I'm just...
It would depend on the cost of the project and the rental income that would come in. So all of our projects, of course, were rent restricted. In an SRO situation where you have a population that is, we'll call them challenging, we provide social services to all of our residents. We don't want that project to be too large because it's tough to manage. So we were looking somewhere in the order of 15, 16, 17 units in this particular property.
Okay.
Normally, in a multifamily situation, it usually pencils out about 40, 45 plus.
Okay. Great. Thank you.
Okay.
Jerry Ryu.
Good evening, Mayor Scholes and members of the council. I'm Jerry Ryu, the director of the San Luis Obispo County Housing Trust Fund. And I'm here mostly to commend the staff for giving you the options that you have. The CDBG funds are going to be difficult to use, and you probably will need an extension no matter what you do. One of the things that I thought might be another option is work in mobile home parks. You can do repairs and maintenance and rehabilitation, handicapped ramps and such in mobile home parks. And Capslo has done that throughout the county. And so that's one more option. It would be hard to spend $180,000 doing that over the next 9 months, but that's one possible use, or possibly doing that plus services of some kind. For the other money, it's important to look at how you can use that money to leverage something of value, both for you as a community, having housing for your residents, affordable housing for your residents, and financially. Peoples does a very good job with this. There are other nonprofits, of course, that do similar work. And I'd like to encourage you to do some kind of a request for proposals, a conceptual request, and pick someone early and then give them a commitment and work with them to make the project work, rather than waiting until they get the project together. It's going to be a long and difficult process, and the Housing Trust Fund would be very happy to work with you, both financially and in terms of working with your staff. I wish you a lot of luck. There's some good opportunities here for the community. Thank you.
Thank you, Jerry. It's always good to see you. Jana Nichols.
Good evening, Council. Staff, Jana Nichols from the Five Cities Homeless Coalition. Thank you very much for putting this on the agenda this evening. I am very heartened by the opportunities it presents. Virtually everyone in the audience here has been a collaborative partner of the coalition and with each other, I think. And so I think, first of all, what I'd like to say is you have a lot of resources in the room, and with time, I think there's probably some really interesting proposals that might come forward to you. I'm an advocate of affordable housing. While I'd certainly like to see public services, I'd like to see these funds used as best can to develop affordable housing. We've had conversations with several partners, including People's Self-Help, with regard to the SRO and with Family Care Network about creating family housing. So one of the challenges that we have, of course, is location. And I understand that will probably be the fundamental challenge. What I'm seeing in terms of housing needs here in the county specifically are single family or single one bedrooms. The SRO would certainly fit that model and be very efficient in terms of spatial use. We have a lot of folks who are single individuals, and they are the ones that we are struggling currently to serve. And those are some of the folks that you've obviously been talking about this evening with regard to the encampments, et cetera. The other I will say is that we have a number of folks who are disabled, who are facing homelessness or have recently been evicted. We're seeing a number of apartment units that are being renovated, And so folks who are seniors and disabled who are on fixed incomes are being asked to leave so those properties can be renovated for higher rents and are not able to return to those same locations due to the rent increases. So the affordability factor is very important, and I think, quite honestly, if we can look at single-person residents, that's going to be more effective in the long run for some of those. But, again, we have numerous families that are also facing challenges. So while I would like to say that we would love to come forward with some public services, and certainly I have some ideas, and I probably would be open to partnering with virtually everyone in this room, I would be remiss if I didn't encourage you to try to look at housing issues. If, however, you, by virtue of the timeline, need to take the CBDG monies and look at a more rapid program, my guess is that while the CBDG funds may need to be spent by one single agency, I would question whether that agency couldn't subcontract with other agencies. We have a long history of being very collaborative in our work, and as I say, we work very closely with virtually all of the agencies here tonight. So thank you.
Thank you, Jana. Bobby Boyer.
Hello, Mayor. Thank you, Council, for having me. My name is Bobby Boyer, and I am the Chief Financial Officer for Family Care Network. I've been the CFO for 15 years there, and I've watched Family Care. I've been a part of Family Care working with youth coming out of foster care, and we've provided since 1999 housing support programs for those youth in San Luis Obispo and Santa Barbara counties. During that time, we were able to secure six properties that we own, all fourplexes in the county, to house youth while they are gaining life skills in our transitional housing program. With that, we have provided all the property management, life skills training, life skill support, housing support, emancipation money, and a program that these kids have been able to be successful. It's a very successful program for our youth, and we've served many, many kids from this area particularly. Last year, we were able to acquire the housing support program with the County of San Luis Obispo. That is the homeless program that is working with the same community that you're talking about. Last March, we were able to coordinate and partner with Department of Social Services to purchase two apartment complexes in Atascadero to house homeless families. That was a very quick turnaround. We were able to garner the funds with DSS, purchase that property in 2 months, and now all of those units are housed with low-income or homeless families today, and we've done a lot of rehab on it also. So we are an agency that can hit the ground running with money, and we have a proven record. Currently, we're serving 77 homeless families through our HSP program in San Luis County. Our proposal is to do something similar, to work with the CDBG funds as well as some other funds to find an apartment complex. What we've done is purchase these 4 or 5 unit complexes to find an apartment complex where we can purchase, manage, and use our HSP funds to provide the support skills that these families need to get housed, to stay housed in our apartment complex in Atascadero. Through our contract with Department of Social Services, we are able to set aside the rent that the families pay, up to $200 a month, for 2 years, so that they have some money to take with them for that down payment on the next house. So we really are a hands-up agency. We have a property that we've already identified right around the corner from here. It's a fourplex, though, but we are willing to look for a fiveplex. We have some other funding that we're looking at to combine with the CDBG funds. We're talking about a project that could be $800,000 or less. We have the ability to work and find those funds fast. And so I think it would be a privilege to be able to talk with you further about it, or I like Jerry's idea about being able to submit a concept proposal. So thank you very much.
Thank you, Ms. Boyer. I don't have any more speaker request forms. Is there anyone that was inspired by what they heard and want to come up and, okay, seeing no one come forward, let me close it to the public, bring it back to the council. And I do, let me ask a couple of questions and we'll have some discussion. Bruce or Bob, we successfully partnered with Habitat for Humanity on, was it 4 units?
Yes.
And so what was, do you recall the details on that?
Well, as I recall, we had the redevelopment agency at the time. We purchased the property using redevelopment agency housing funds. The cost wasn't cheap. Even then, it was about $400,000, if I recollect correctly. And then, in addition to that, we also utilized agency funds to, I think, for the development impact fees. And so the commitment to that project was probably the upside of $500,000 all total.
And I think we had some home grant funds as part of that, correct?
That's correct.
Okay. Bruce, let me, the public services, and I see it talks about, or public facility, I'm sorry, and I'm looking on page 3 on the bullet, and it talks about rehabilitation or new construction of buildings used for public purposes such as training, health services, education, recreation, nutrition, shelter, daycare, temporary housing, and fire protection. I'm just, in my mind, I was thinking we have a daycare facility at Trueville, and I don't know the condition of that, but would something like that qualify? I just wanted to ask that question.
We asked specifically our consultants about use of funding for Trueville. And while it does have a house a program like that that is specifically targeted at low income, the facility itself is not dedicated to those kinds of programs.
Okay.
Hence, that's why we came back to, at a minimum, we know we could use it for ADA improvements only, but nothing beyond that.
Okay. And then I think lastly, under the CDBG funds, you were talking about doing further research on whether those funds could be divvied up between, let's say, 3 organizations for programs. Is that something you need to clarify, you need to call and get a definitive answer on?
Yeah, I think especially if the council direction tonight is to use the funds for something other than the multifamily project, again, for the council to discuss. But then we would go back and be more definitive, come back again for March 7th at a public hearing with more detailed options that we've heard tonight, and then you could still weigh those before making a decision.
Okay. And because the reason I'm asking that, and Bob can correct me if I'm wrong, we used to go through the CDBG process. There would be a certain percentage of those funds that were for public organizations, and people would apply, and then we would go through, and because we were all such nice people, we would give everyone a little bit of money. I don't know if we even moved the needle, but then we went to using general fund dollars or something like that. So if this is an opportunity, then maybe we could look at entertaining proposals. Is that kind of a thought that you thought of, something that you had thought about?
The big difference was, up until a few years ago, the city was on the entitlement program through the county,
right.
And so actually we were getting $180,000.
Yeah, we were getting peanuts.
But
right.
A certain percentage of that had to go to public services, and then you were able to divvy up that amount into as many organizations as you wanted. When we went non-entitlement and we went to the state for competitive. Mm-hmm. That's where this limitation on the number of organizations that we can provide the public service monies to is coming in question.
Okay.
So,
it's
maybe
one,
it may be maybe 3 at the most from what we're looking in the current program.
So can you get a clarification on that?
Absolutely, because again, we're uncertain that even though the current year's NOFA would allow it, we may be subject to the rules that this money was funded under the 2013 NOFA. So we may have different rules to play.
Gotcha. Okay. Mayor Pro Tem, I'm going to let you start this discussion.
Gotcha. And actually, I had one more question around there. So is in the previous discussion, you said that rapid rehousing was not an allowable use of the public service monies.
Correct.
Okay. So now, realizing that the Five Cities Homeless Coalition has and other organizations have a series of rapid rehousing funding that they're using. Could this be kind of an extension of that, realizing that there's other organizations or other grant or other programs that are doing the rapid rehousing, but that these funds would be the extension of that, more of the long-term assistance, which would then be maybe not directly tied to a homeless service, but would be a continuation of that. Am I making that question clear? Or it would.
So, no.
Okay, gotcha. So, and Janet, perhaps you can help me with the mayor's prerogative, if you're able to read my mind here.
Don't move too soon, kind of having to open this back up to the public. So, ask your question.
So let's say the rapid rehousing program allows for a group of individuals to be there for 6 months with a series of objectives that need to be satisfied. Beyond that, if those rapid rehousing funds are expended, could this funds then be used to be the final rental assistance, the continuing ongoing rental, because technically they're not rapidly rehoused. They're in a program that could be extended by use of these funds. Okay.
We didn't get into that specificity when we were asking the questions, but I think my understanding in the conversation was that the funding could not be used for rapid rehousing or temporary housing costs. However, in conjunction with that, it could be used for other services like counseling.
Counseling, okay. Gotcha. Which could be combined with the rapid rehousing monies from other organizations, the participation in the counseling while they're going through those other programs.
Yes, I think, but there'd be two separate programs. This would be for counseling or providing services, whether they were in rapid rehousing or any other type of housing. I think they would still be eligible for that service.
Okay, gotcha. And that would kind of fall under that RFP process that you were potentially discussing earlier. This could be one of the opportunities that an organization could come forward with.
Yes, but I'll clarify that staff really felt that the RFP process, which just takes months to go through the selection process, was really more focused on the housing program to do some kind of actual housing project.
So the $316,000 versus the $186,000.
Okay. The $180,000, the CDBG monies is really the ones that we're trying to get some direction on as soon as possible.
Gotcha. So I guess to start that conversation, then I'm encouraged by the opportunity that we've got for the public service aspect of this with regards to the homeless services or the drug and alcohol abuse. Mm-hmm. I'm intrigued because there's no other programs in South County that are able to utilize or have ongoing programs for that I'm aware of. I mean, I think the closest facility is down in Santa Maria, if I'm correct, and yet there's obviously a need for that. People need to be clean in order to get into some of the other programs. So it'd be I don't know who we could partner with or whatnot or the homeless services with regards to that. I've heard some very good information. Mm-hmm. I'd like to hear more. I don't know if it's the 186 and we bring that conversation in a different fashion, but the 315 might be good to have the RFP process from that perspective.
Okay, very good. Let's see, Councilor Michelle.
Yeah, I think one comment I had is just in all the questions you're going to ask about services, I think Jana brought up a really good point about asking if one group could subcontract and how that might work, because we are so many small organizations here. I really like the idea of taking the $316,000 and getting the SRO project leveraged and working with people's self-help or other entities that would come in and make a proposal. I'm really, really excited about that fact. I know all of us have just wanted to get some housing, so I think that's. I'm so happy we're discussing this tonight. As far as the 186, it sounds like not that $186,000 is ever a bad thing, but it might almost be a hindrance when combined. So I don't think I would want to do that. I think, if possible, with $186,000, I would love. I liked the idea of being able to quickly also do some housing. I know, you know, some homeless organizations maybe didn't hear about this tonight. I would like to maybe give people, obviously not a lot of time, but maybe 30 days to come to us with a plan. Maybe you can first clarify the parameters, and then maybe we could look at four very clear plans and maybe make a decision on the 186 in a timely, very timely manner, as we have to. Because I know where Jeff is going with the detox facility. I know that's needed, and I know that's a huge goal of Five Cities Homeless Coalition, but they are the only group around here, not that any homeless organization is well-funded, but they are the only group that kind of is funded. And I would like to maybe, I don't know, spread the ideas. If there are other things out there, I just don't know.
Okay. Barbara, you have anything?
I'm kind of thinking outside the box. With an article that I read in the LA Times today about a program being set up in San Diego, being used successfully in San Francisco, which is a mobile healthcare facility for the homeless. They can get showers, they can get shaves, they can get haircuts, they can get alcohol abuse testing. It could provide a bunch of social services and park in different areas at different days of the week to be seen and accessible. Would $186,000 go anywhere near funding that kind of thing?
Okay. Anything else?
No, that's about it.
All right. Some really good ideas up here, really good comments from folks from the respective organizations. Thank you all for taking time to come down here tonight and discuss this with us. I think for us on this dais, I think the first question is to combine or not to combine, and I think I'm hearing folks say that they don't want to burden the 316 with the 186. Do we have consensus on that?
Pretty much.
Unfortunately.
Yeah. I know. I had done the math at home, and I was like going, I have a site in mind for a project. However, I think what I'm hearing is then we're not going to combine them. Sounds like there's a strong leaning toward using the 186 for public service. And so if that is the consensus of the council, is everyone in agreement with that?
Yes.
Then I think the process is we need to entertain proposals from respective organizations, because I think we can't make those decisions tonight. Correct, Bruce?
Correct, but what we can do is get clarification from our CDBG consultant on the use. We'd be happy to forward that to the interested organizations, and then I think let them provide something back to us.
Agreed.
In a proposal that could be evaluated. That way, ultimately, come back to the council. We've got some solid ideas, and we can give you some specific feedback. And in the meantime, if something they submit is not eligible, then we can immediately tell them what adjustments may need to be necessary. So we can work with them to try to get as many options before the council for uses of public services.
Okay, and that's for the CDBG.
Correct.
Okay, so.
Yep, that's all CDBG.
I want to keep the two separate.
Yep.
So I see the Mayor Pro Tem flinching. I still have pretty good peripheral vision from my basketball days. What do you have something?
And I was going to ask a question towards the 186. Is obviously this. How do I say this? The consultant is already being paid through other funding sources associated with this funding, but there is going to be other staff time. Will that come out of the 186?
It's actually $200,000, and $14,000 is for administration.
They've already taken it out.
We got ourselves covered.
Okay. Very good. So then the other aspect of that is obviously the deadline with regards to that. So in whatever conversations you have with that. It would need to be clear that the funding would need to be expended by September of 2016, correct? I mean, there...
That is the deadline. You know, we've had conversations with HCD staff extensively. That's why we're here tonight, believing that there is flexibility to change these funding.
Well, and I would say that whatever you're going to put together to solicit folks come in and give us a proposal, you're going to spell out deadlines. And I think that's going to be part of the selection criteria, because what we don't want is folks coming in here making promises that they can't keep. So we'll assess that at a subsequent meeting. But I think those are things that certainly will need to be in the criteria that goes out to them. You have one more?
Sorry, I was going to piggyback on that with regards to one of the questions, and maybe you just answered this, but would it need to be allocated, or would it need to be actually completely expended? I mean, because let's say we funded a homeless service provider and said, okay, you've got the funding is now allocated, but they don't use it until March of next year. Is that then not eligible?
It is clear that the monies have to be expended by September 30th unless an extension was granted. So we'll go back and have that conversation as well, especially the allocation will actually occur at the public hearing the council will have to say now the monies have been transferred to a different eligible criteria. And then from that point, as the mayor indicated, the council will have to make sure that the monies can be expended in a reasonable time.
And I think that kind of goes to the point of if the organizations come in and say that that's just too tough a deadline for us to meet, then we'll have to have a conversation of whether we go back and try and combine the two and get a project on the ground, but I don't want to overly complicate things tonight.
And there will still be other options of housing assistance, and those would still be provided all as options in the public hearing for the council to make a decision.
So then I do want to have us give some direction regarding the housing fund, and it looks like we could potentially have up to $316,000, if I understand, and that doesn't have the time restrictions, but I think Ms. Boyer brought up a really good project today that certainly warrants some discussion. I think we were very successful in partnering with Habitat for Humanity and getting 4 units on the ground, and I know Mr. Yu and his organization was involved in it. So we've done that before. I think we need to move forward. I have identified a lot. I think it's for sale. It's over on, I want to say, 6 Long Branch, and it's next to some property that was deeded to the city. And I know that restrictions on that was that it had to be for recreational purposes, but I think there may be an opportunity to do more than 5 units. So I think that's just something for us to discuss, but I think we should start having also that discussion regarding how do we move forward with having people come in with proposals or us entertain proposals on how to use those funds and to get a project on the ground. So I think that's maybe something we'll leave in. Is that... everyone in concurrence with that?
Yeah, I would like to see proposals. I don't know if we should set a timeline or...
Well, I think let's deal with the CDBG and the 186 first, and then we'll, based on limited resources we have here, staff can come back to us when you think would be a good time for us to have that discussion.
Okay. And I, too, I think you mean, and I just want to make sure I understand what you mean all proposals, because I really liked also the idea of the SROs as well. So, we're totally open right now.
We're not basically limiting proposals. We're saying put together a proposal and come and talk to us and let's figure out what works, because I think there are some challenges. There's a reason, even though I was given the gentleman from People's Self-Help Housing and formerly Jeanette Duncan such a hard time was... they do have minimum, and so we need to figure out what works best in our community. And I think the idea is that we don't want to overbuild corner lots. We want to try and take some control over those, because in the past we've had people trying to cram units in a neighborhood, and there was a neighborhood backlash. But, yes, make a proposal, and let's evaluate it from a council and make some decisions. So, Bruce, do you think you have enough direction on these?
Yeah, on the last one, to clarify that at this time there is no action. The staff will come back with a proposal on sending out an RFP and some criteria for you to, and then we would give adequate time for the groups to provide an actual project or...
That is correct.
Okay.
I had a question. Should we, this might be getting too complicated, but should we set any parameters on the services? For example, it's important to me that the service specifically help people in Grover Beach. I mean, should we set any criteria?
Well, I don't think we're prepared to set criteria tonight. So I would say if you're going to, let's figure out what that process is. Is the staff coming back to us and saying, here's what we suggest as criteria? But I know we're working with a short time frame, so we got to kind of figure out how we do that.
The monies have to be spent on Grover Beach residences by definition.
Okay.
So there are some criteria already.
And we'll ask the question about how do we make sure, or I think it's a majority of the people are Grover Beach residences. We'll have to ask about that, because the question with the homeless, the first question would be, well, where are they from? Are they Grover Beach residents? So we'll look into that. But as far as timing, I mean, we'll, as fast as we can, respond to the groups with what we believe are the criteria to be eligible for providing services. What I'm hearing is, again, primarily to the homeless community. And then as soon as we can get some feedback from them, we'll provide them with, yes, that does sound like something that's qualified. And we would still try to come back in March, maybe the second meeting in March, so that we can try to get some direction from you.
But I would say, let's just not say homeless. Let's say, obviously, people who are, we're talking about low income or people who are working poor. I mean, there are, so I want to, let's be a little more broad.
Gotcha.
With respect to that. Okay. I think staff's got sufficient direction. At this point, let's take a 10-minute break. Let's reconvene at 8:35. I guess not 10, but close enough. Mm-hmm. You did.
Ladies.
I'm going to reconvene the City Council meeting on Monday, February 1st, 2016. And when we last left, we had just concluded number nine, which we had taken ahead of item number eight. So we are going to go back to item number eight. This is a mid-year budget review and request to amend the fiscal year 16 budget. City Manager Perrault.
Yes, Mr. Mayor, members of the City Council, it's indeed a pleasure to be able to present to you the mid-year budget review for FY16. The mid-year budget review, if we could go back one, provides the council an opportunity to take a look at revenues and expenditures for each of the city's major funds through December 31st, 15. It also gives the council an opportunity now to make mid-course corrections and adjustments. We have some of those recommended for you tonight. It also provides an opportunity to review work program progress to date. And with that discussion, obviously the council can undertake a change in priorities as you feel necessary. With that, we'll also be providing the council with an update on many of the major projects. I'm going to go through this component by component. The first component will be the financials, and beginning with the general fund. Following that, we'll talk about the major projects and conclude with capital improvement program. As we go through the discussion, obviously staff is available to answer any questions, so just feel free to interrupt me. You don't need to wait to the complete end of the staff report to ask a particular question. Starting off with the general fund. General fund, we've done an updated estimate that takes a look at revenues through the end of the fiscal year. And at this point, it looks like they'll be up a little bit better than $140,000. Really, for two reasons. Obviously, property tax is running a little bit ahead of what we had anticipated. And in addition, we received a one-time payment from the county of $64,000 that really was a part of our conversion to the Teeter plan in terms of the way property taxes are distributed. Sales tax overall are increasing. I would note, though, that point of sale taxes are expected to increase by about $48,000 through the end of the year. It's interesting, the half-cent adjustment, actually we're seeing a little bit of a negative from our projection. And it's interesting to note that the reason is because the half-cent sales tax adjustment is probably tied more closer to, believe it or not, automobile sales throughout the state. We actually get a portion of sales tax if the purchaser is a resident of Grover Beach. So sometimes that particular tax item fluctuates according to what's happening on the statewide basis. We have a series of recommendations regarding adjustments to expenditures. The attachment, you probably noted the attached report from the Administrative Services Director. Line budgets are generally flowing right along about what's anticipated. As I've said, we have some recommended adjustments. Those recommended adjustments, if approved by the council, would actually leave us with an operational deficit of $197,142. I do want to note that this is apart from the $137,000 that the council had previously identified for reserve funding for the upgrade to the financial system. Cash reserves are sufficient. At the beginning of the year, they were slightly over $3 million. In terms of the recommended adjustments, roof repairs is probably on the top of the list. Due to the recent rain, we've had a significant issue with leaks in primarily this building and to a certain degree the police department building. So we really need to undertake some emergency repairs. And so we're requesting an adjustment of $31,626. The police chief, police department, as you may note, it actually had requested four additional vehicles at this time, and four vehicles that three of which are currently needing to be replaced and an additional vehicle that he's requesting for the detective. I'm recommending that only two of those vehicles be purchased at this time for a general fund adjustment of $35,000. In part, the reason why it's only $35,000 is that we actually have a COPS grant that we have the availability to use this year that won't be available next year in the amount of about $25,000. And we also had some savings on other equipment purchases that will help offset the cost of purchasing at least two vehicles. There is a minor code enforcement adjustment that we're suggesting at $2,874. Then we have two other items, an executive management agreement. That's the agreement that council authorized last fall that we needed to bring the actual adjustment to you on. And same as with the vacation back pay at $37,500. I did want to note that we had a request from the fire department, which I also, Five Cities Fire Authority, which I also included in the our staff report. And that's really to provide a security gate from for their back parking lot. I didn't recommend it at this time. It's not because it's not needed. The cost is between $25,000 and $30,000. It's because we're going to go ahead and undertake a building inventory of all of our main city facilities to take a look at what all of the needs are. And then the intent was to bring those back to the council during the full budget presentation and ask you to essentially prioritize what gets funded when. I will note that obviously departments are here if you have any specific questions of them. Fire Chief may in fact want to address you regarding the security gate. Moving along to the water fund. we're doing slightly better than what we reported at the first quarter. Coming out of last year, cash reserves are a little bit higher than we anticipated. That being that cash reserves were about $255,000 than we originally estimated. We now have audited figures, so we know that the $1,350,000 is a good number. Our revenues are expected to come in at $2,635,174. Obviously, they're still down. They're still down due to our conservation efforts. And our operational expenditures are coming about in where we expected them to at slightly more than $2.8 million. Council, during the first quarter report, we had originally budgeted for $660,000 in the capital expenditures. Council authorized us to delay a couple of those projects at the first quarter review. That included tank coating and our meter replacement program for the time being. So that brought those capital expenditures are now at $420,000, and the transfers out are at $315,000 as originally budgeted. This will mean that we'll have an estimated year-end cash reserve of $449,467. We have released the RFP, request for proposal for the utility rate study. Actually, the closing date for the utility rate study is Friday, and we will try and to bring that back to you as soon as we can. Actually, it's Thursday. Thursday's the closing date on the utility rate study. So we'll try and turn that around with a recommendation so that we can get the consultant underway as soon as possible. The mid-year water fund requests are similar to what you see. These are just share of roof repairs and share of the necessary agreements. Very similar to the general fund. Wastewater fund still holding steady. Nothing much expected there. It's about balanced. $14,390. You have better than a $3 million cash reserve in the wastewater fund. So, you know, the $14,000, if it still remains at the end of the year, it will be easily covered. Going back to just for a second to the general fund, I'm not going to back up the slides, but a final comment is that we're at the mid-year point, and a lot of things still can change. I'm expecting that the revenue trends will remain hopefully solid, and we may still see some improvement before the end of the year. At this point today, we're still looking at a deficit in that general fund. And going back to the wastewater fund adjustments, these, again, are just share adjustments similar to what you've seen in the general fund. Moving along to the goals and work program status report. You have attached to your report a listing of the goals that the council adopted in the spring of last year. You actually adopted five major goals, and there were a number of implementation tasks associated with each goal. The actual report itself includes program progress, and dates and assigned staff as well. In going through the goals now, I'm not going through each of them. There's several, but I just wanted to highlight those that seem to be the most important to the council. Certainly, staff is available to dialogue with the council on any of the goals you decide to review a little further. Economic development and economic vitality continue to be the highest priority that this council has established in terms of a goal, and we continue to look at it that way. The most important goal on that list is the Lodge and Conference Center. That is an extremely high priority. What we're going to suggest is the direction to proceed with the engineering and architectural design services. We need to do that at this time. And these are the assignments. Actually, I'm going to suggest that the JAA members that are now serving serve as a subcommittee to work with staff in terms of making those selections. Any JAA activity, and even with these members acting as a subcommittee, they'll still be subject to reporting back to the council as a whole, periodic updates as to what's occurring there. When we get to the capital improvement program, you'll see that I'm actually recommending a transfer of funds to allocate and undertake this particular activity. Long-term street rehabilitation projects. I know we've talked about these before, but again, just to bring you up to date, the second set of streets are expected to be under construction later this month. You've probably already seen the posting of the signs. The pre-construction meetings are going to be held this coming week. Will actually be held here because it's not appropriate to hold them out on site in the dark, so we'll be here. And we've actually notified all of the property owners and residents by mail of those meetings. So that's really coming upon us very quickly. The third set of streets will begin the preliminary design on this next month. Second bond issue. At the next council meeting, staff will be bringing to you an item to initiate the second bond issue under the Measure K-14 funds. We anticipate that with the second set of streets, the majority of the initial $5 million will be spent by the end of the fiscal year. Starting with the second bond issue, we're looking at $8 million. If the council chooses to initiate that bond issue at the next meeting, we should be able to close by the end of April. So those dollars would be available at that time. Assigned staff is the street program manager, public works director, and the city manager from the financing aspect. Broadband design, we're wrapping that up, and it's my hope that we'll also be able to bring to council finally the authorization to go out to bid by the next meeting before I leave. Oak Park street rehabilitation, we covered this at the last meeting a bit, but I wanted to let you know again that the base bid is out to bid, West Grand Avenue to the city limits. As you may have seen in the Friday letter, we've actually issued an addendum that will incorporate the plans from Arroyo Grande and that will take the project from the city limits actually down to El Camino Real. The bid is now tentatively scheduled for award on March 7th. It'll close on February 17th. And per council direction, staff is proceeding with plans to pave West Grand from Oak Park east to the city limits with AG. Public safety, I thought I'd cover this for a second. Obviously, you could see that we're making progress there. You could see that earlier this evening with the number of hires we've made. Actually, the sworn personnel is 19 full-time sworn positions. Currently, when I wrote this report, there were 16 positions filled, one of those being out on injured status. Obviously, we brought two new officers on today. That brings us to 18. We'll still have two vacancies that we're going to be working to fill. We've got an ongoing recruitment going on, and we're working with that with human resources, and we hope that we'll be able to reach the full 19 by the end of the fiscal year. That's what our goal is. There's a couple of program recommendations I wanted to at least discuss with you. You asked me actually to bring back the medical marijuana ordinance. I'm actually suggesting that council may want to consider delaying that until after the November election. As you may know, there's a proposition that I think it's qualified relative to the recreational marijuana use. And the only reason I'm suggesting it is that I'm not certain that that may make a difference to the council in terms of how you want to approach that issue, but it may. And my other point here is just that we think that this would take about 6 months' worth of work. And, you know, given the level of focus we've got on the rest of the work program, this is a consideration that I'd like to have the council discuss. The other is the styrofoam ban legislation. We get, we do get periodic communication regarding this. I understand that there are now four cities that actually ban the styrofoam. I'm thinking that, you know, this one would take 20 to 30 hours worth of staff work probably to prepare. You know, I'm actually thinking that a city perhaps other than Grover Beach may pass this, and then it would become IWMA that would probably make it countywide, and we would be able to follow along with that program. But it certainly is a council consideration as to whether you want us to proceed with that or not. I wanted just to briefly talk about the capital improvement programs. Again, there are, believe it or not, 22 projects in that queue. Represents $10,838,990 worth of commitment. It's significantly higher than I think what we had on the books for last year, which was slightly more than $2 million. Obviously, a lot of this has to do with the street program, as well as the waterline project that we are going to be constructing this summer, and obviously Oak Park at the north side of $1.7 million. So that's where a significant amount of your $10 million effort is coming from. The major recommendation that I have here is that the council actually transfer $215,000 from Project 283, those would be general fund dollars, to project number 275, which is your lodge and conference center. The reason that I'm suggesting this, 283 is your local streets program. It is other than Measure K-14. The budget intent was to take care of those streets that may not be directly funded by Measure K-14. There still is about $400,000 in that fund, exclusive of the 215. That's basically some LTF funding that is still available to do that in the event it's needed. Moving these dollars over to the conference center with the direction for the council will allow us to get going with the engineering and design services necessary to keep the project in line. So essentially, in terms of the mid-year, by motion, I'm recommending the council adopt the transfer of the 215 from the CIP project 283 to CIP 275, and then adopt a series of resolutions that you see laid out here that would incorporate the changes that staff is recommending. And essentially, that concludes the staff report, and myself and the various department heads are here to be able to answer your questions.
Thank you, Bob. Let's see who's got questions. Councilmember Shaw, you want to start?
Sure. I asked Bob quite a few questions this afternoon just in getting myself familiar with this process because it's kind of my first year of all this. But I just had one question left on the recommendations. I know one of the recommendations is moving funding from, let's see, what was it,
283
to 275.
Right.
And funding the lodge project. I know at different times we've talked about grant funding for the lodge or seeking grants. Would this decision jeopardize that?
No.
Okay. Thank you.
Okay.
That's all I have.
Very good. Councilmember Nichols.
Let me think for a minute.
Okay. Mayor Pro Tem Lee.
Thank you. Couple questions with regards to, and this may ultimately get around with regards to the roof and the facilities and the fire station. Mm-hmm. With regards to the facility assessment, for lack of a better term, and is there a plan for how much that might anticipate it be costing, and then what buildings we would anticipate
well,
doing?
Essentially, I would look at that the inventory focusing on your essential facilities, which really include the city hall, the police station, and the fire station. And what I'd really be looking at is I'm going to, which I have the ability to do, actually under current budget, is to bring a building inspector in, take a look at, with the idea not of just correcting code requirements, but more of an idea of what we may or should be doing to begin ensuring the buildings are properly maintained. The problem that we're dealing with is a lot of deferred maintenance over a number of years, and we need to start making a progress on that. Right. So what I would hope is that when that inspection is done, I'll end up with a list, or the next city manager will, that he'll bring back, or she, to the council, and it'll be a part of a budget discussion, and ultimately it would be up to the council as to how you wanted to prioritize those expenditures.
Okay, so so that you basically you would kind of determine what the essential buildings are,
right?
And then we could then have the conversation as to when we then go to the other non-essential buildings if we proceed in that direction. So, okay. For the Water Enterprise Fund, and I saw it in the staff report, a reference to it, but I don't specifically see it at the moment. There was a discussion with regards to having a minimum reserve in there too for our Zone 3 balance, for our Zone 3 annual.
Yeah, payment. We are actually required to maintain that.
And I didn't see the actual amount of what that would be.
Do you recall?
I know the coverage is 125%.
Of what?
I believe it's of the operating.
So I actually believe
it's actually of the debt service.
It's the debt service,
which would take it to about 600 to 650,000.
So, which leads to the question then: is this doesn't cover that?
Right, yeah. It doesn't. But what you'll need to do, if number one, what you'll have to look at when the we're covered for this year.
Okay.
What you need to do is, as you look to next year, you're going to have to deal with the issue as to whether raise rates. One of the things you may have to, and I spoke about that before, was potentially an interfund loan if you had to.
Okay. So, but we're covered for this
year. For this year.
Okay. Gotcha. Okay. Then my just a logistical question on the $210,000, $215,000
right.
recommended transfer. That would be for engineering design and project management services.
Right.
Okay. And that would cover us effectively through
the end of the fiscal year. And, you know, that's probably a really conservative estimate because you have to understand that by conservative, I mean that we still – a lot of that will be determined with the engineering. If you go through an RFP process, it'll take some time.
Okay.
So you may not be close to spending that kind of money.
Okay.
But at least that gives you the flexibility to get started.
Okay, gotcha. So I'll hold comments on the medical marijuana as well as the styrofoam ban. So until we have discussion. So for Project 283, so with some of the funding sources for the, we would be able to utilize some of those fundings if budget for Oak Park, or excuse me, bids for Oak Park came in higher than anticipated.
Yeah, there is still some of that left. It still remains unallocated.
Okay. Gotcha. I think that was my questions.
Okay. You need more time, or you want me to ask questions?
I should have come in this afternoon and talked to you about this, Bob. But explain to me again how the Water Enterprise Fund, Wastewater Enterprise Fund, and the Vacation Buyback Program is shared.
Well,
with the general fund on this.
Well, what I meant with that is when you enter into any kind of labor agreement, your employees are generally funded with the by all three enterprises. So that's essentially a breakdown of how that's proportionately spread. In other words, you have in public, for instance, myself. I do work in the general fund, do work in the water fund, and do work in the sewer fund. So all my salary and benefits are spread proportionately, and labor agreements are also spread the same way.
So how does that cover roof repair?
The roof repair is also proportionately shared.
Okay.
Because it's a building that is used by the water and sewer enterprise, administration, utility billing, all of those functions are here.
Okay. Okay, I get it now. Thank you very much. That's it.
Okay. So let me start with, Bob, you talked about a potential operational deficit of 197,
right,
correct? Because
right.
We're just forecasting.
Right,
so
that's
I want to make sure no one walks out of here and says we have a deficit when we really don't know until we get to.
Well, you won't know until you get to the end of the
could
year.
Could be higher, could be lower, could be balanced.
Yes.
Okay. Just, can you clarify for me, because when I look through a nice staff report, but when I look through this, am I seeing that you're recommending, or it looks like it includes using some reserves for employee costs?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah, at this point, any of those adjustments would essentially be funded by reserves.
Okay, and then the question I had, number three, I think Mayor Pro Tem Lee asked that. Wastewater fund, I think you showed on the slide, you just showed that basically based on projected revenues and expenditures, we are trending at potentially 14,300 and change under,
right?
Basically. And so obviously that's close enough that we could, that could come in and be balanced at
right.
the end of the year. What I didn't see was a discussion, and I saw that in the attachment 4 from Administrative Services Director Chapman, attachment 4, page 9, I saw a water analysis, but I didn't see anything regarding wastewater fund analysis or ending cash reserves.
I can probably I can give you a quick estimate of that.
Okay.
If you just will give it. The reality is that the cash reserves within the wastewater fund are in essence at slightly more than I've got it actually right here.
Perfect.
Wastewater fund, the beginning balance was roughly 3.1 million.
Mm-hmm.
With what you see portrayed here, you're really looking at 3.1 million going out of the year, that there will be no changed really for all intents and purposes to okay. cash balance.
And this is what you alluded to when you talked about a inner
right
inner loan,
right.
A fund, yeah, loan. Okay. I think Jeff asked my question regarding 283 and 275. I think Miriam actually asked the question too. Maybe Chief Peters could answer this question. So the request for these vehicles, and you talked about all of these vehicles being over 100,000 miles. What is the mileage? Is that an industry standard or is it a city policy? I'm just curious.
Well, we don't have an established policy on the miles. We pretty much will drive the vehicle until they're pretty much break.
Okay.
These cars are approaching that. We had some plans for the Parks and Recs Department. We'll be taking one of the vehicles that we currently utilize, and they'll be using that for their purposes instead of driving their own vehicles for mm-hmm. doing city business. And then the other two vehicles will be moved down into other services within the police department. So as the city manager stated, the four vehicles are needed replacement, but two of them we can live with right now, and we do have the additional funding to do that right now, but we won't have that additional $25,000 in the next budget.
Okay, and then are you looking at new vehicles, or are you looking at vehicles that have been used but will be new to us, are there opportunities to buy from other organizations? So what's your thought process on that?
We looked at several different vehicles. Because the vehicles have to be outfitted with emergency equipment, we need certain specifics in reference to electrics and stuff like that. So we looked at a police-rated vehicle through Ford, and it was out of a dealership in the Los Angeles metro area. But what we found was that we were able to price a vehicle that's pretty similar, if not a little bit better. These are new vehicles here locally. So, in fact, we, by buying it locally, the cost is just about the same, and we get probably a better vehicle in the long run. Now, the reason is that they're new vehicles, the projected life of these new vehicles, because the ones that we are driving now, those were all old, used vehicles when we bought them. So they had, you know, several thousands of miles on them, and they lasted, you know, 5 to 6 or 7 years in some cases. The projection for these new vehicles would be 8 to 10 years of life. So it will spread out quite a bit in reference to how much we're going to be using.
Okay. And then, Bob, you can maybe, you guys can tag team this however you want. So I know, obviously, we brought on some new police officers. We've made some promotions tonight, so that's great. I think we're working towards the goal of having the 19 sworn positions. But if I understood correctly, we have two that still are unfilled. Is that correct?
We currently have one position that is vacant.
Okay. So, Bob, maybe you can enlighten me with respect to if we have one vacant position that was budgeted for. I know there's overtime, and I don't know what the number is, but is there any potential cost savings if, because I'm, you know, given that we've got, what, 3 months almost, a little more than 3 months for this fiscal year?
It most likely won't be for a couple of reasons, unfortunately. One, the overtime budget is exceeded at this particular point because when we didn't have this staffing, we obviously had to bring cover officers when they needed to be out there. The two officers you brought on today or saw brought on today won't actually be field ready themselves, and by that I mean be able to be out in patrol by themselves for at least 4 months. They have to go through a field training program. And the other issue that we'll be dealing with is that there will be, when we have this retiring officer going in April, there will be a cash out of his remaining benefits, which will likely prohibit any cost savings there. We are seeing some slight cost savings in the dispatch area because we're also trying to fill spots.
So, and no idea what that might be. I mean, dispatch and police, they're all the same, so I'm just, to me, so.
Mr. Mayor, I think we're probably going to come in overall in the police department with the retirement and the payout associated with that, probably $10,000 to $20,000 potentially under, but that's a potential at this point, with the unknown being how much overtime additional we're going to use, because we are already over on the overtime.
We are.
We're overspent on overtime currently.
Okay. It'd be nice to see that number at some point. Thank you, Chief. So I want to kind of segue, and I don't want to – I know Chief Lieberman has been here patiently, and I know the city manager said he may have want to address the council. So what I want to do is maybe ask him to come forward if you – because I know that there was a request, looks like, for, I guess, some security fencing. So maybe you can provide us some additional information that's maybe not in the staff report that you want us to consider.
Thank you, Mayor. Good evening, Mayor and Council. I'm Steve Lieberman, your fire chief. I respectfully support the report tonight, and I'm coming to you as a fire chief to talk about the request for the security fencing and gate that would be along South 7th Street. This has been a request that predates my time with the Five Cities Fire Authority. And this is really a safety issue as far as I'm concerned. It's a public safety agency that's staffed 24 hours a day. There's issues with transients coming into the back parking lot. We are a state-certified confined space training facility, which is a fabulous thing, but a lot of the props, the concrete piping and everything else turned into hiding places where when the crews are coming back from a late-night call, they're chasing people out of the back parking lot where we have additional equipment plus the personal vehicles. Last week, we actually had some drug paraphernalia that was dropped on the facility, and we worked with the police department to start a report on that. But this is not just I'm not just asking this because it's a nice to have. I believe it's a need to have, and I just wanted to put that before you and see if you have any questions for me.
Great, thank you, Chief. Any questions of the chief? No. Jess? No. Okay. Great.
Thank you.
So, Bob, I do have maybe one or two more questions. I think there was an engineering tech, and I believe that we had budgeted $60,000 for that. We haven't been successful. So was just kind of curious, are those funds available to be used for other for any adjustments?
Well, certainly the associate engineer position remains unfilled. You know, it was budgeted at $60,000 for the entire year. So we're almost, we're a little bit over the halfway point, so you're probably looking at $15,000 potentially still there. We are still actively recruiting for that position.
Wait, did I hear you correctly? We budgeted $60,000 and we may have $15,000 remaining?
We may spend $15,000.
Oh, okay. All right. I was like going, what are you guys spending money on?
No. So we may be spending $15,000.
Okay, understand.
And I will say that it's spread throughout several different accounting funds.
Okay. But primarily general fund?
General fund. Okay. The $60,000 is general fund.
Gotcha. Perfect. Thank you, sir. Let's see. So I just want to get clarification on the streets. You talked about the second set, and I'm just trying to match it up because I know we've heard Greg use numbers like 2015-1, 2015-2, 2015-3, 2016-1. So is the second set the 2015-2?
Is that yes, which, okay. You know, for me, I can't remember the streets offhand, but that's North 13th, Saratoga.
You don't have to read the list. Okay. I'm just trying to gain some understanding. Yeah. And then the third set, because in your staff report you said third set, and I was trying to think, is that the light maintenance, which is 2015-3, or is that the 2016-1?
Actually, the light maintenance should follow pretty closely to what we're doing here. And then actually when I was talking about the design and getting started in March, that would be the next large set of streets.
Okay. So it's not necessarily a budget issue, but I just feel compelled to ask this question of Greg. The light maintenance streets, I think Mayor Pro Tem brought this up, that you have all the streets. I'm just going to say it. You have all the streets in the neighborhood near 13th and Faro, except for Encinitas Court and Pebble. And I know we had brought up some concerns about that. I was just curious if Mr. Ray or the consultant had gone over and looked at those streets, because I think they're all pretty much in the same light maintenance conditions. So I'm just kind of thinking, has that ship sailed, and has staff kind of rethought that approach?
Greg?
Is this working?
Yes.
Okay. So, Encinitas and Pebble, if you recall, the last package we included those as in the initial. When we first started looking at it, those streets were included. That package, when we initially put it together, included a mix of rehabilitation types, both light and heavy maintenance, and so. When those streets ultimately were eliminated because of various funding concerns, they remain on the heavy maintenance side of things. So they're actually shifted to 2016-1.
whereas the light maintenance package is covering the streets. It really could be just slurries.
So. I understand. So what I'm saying is, and I'm not going to push too hard on this because I live on Incident East Court, but if we're trying to do things in a cost-effective manner and we don't know the sync up of 2015-3 and 2016-1, those streets don't require heavy maintenance. So I'm asking that someone take another look because there could be some cost savings. That's kind of where I'm going to leave it there.
Okay, just so I'm clear, to see if they could possibly be moved into the light maintenance package.
Yeah, I think they're in the same condition as all the other streets that are being done over there.
We'll definitely take a look.
Okay. And I'm going to say my comments on the medical marijuana and the styrofoam ban as Mayor Pro Tem has done. So with that, we are done with questions. Let me open this up to the public. Is there anyone in the audience that would like to address the item before the council? That would be you. That would be you.
On the 200,000 is that the only funding available right now for design?
Mr. Mayor,
yes.
That is general fund dollars that have not been spent yet and are not allocated to a specific project. Specific project within the 283. Most of the rest, the remaining general fund dollars are allocated, and the only other area to that could accommodate would be out of reserves.
Okay, so $210,000 is essentially seed money to blast off. Is that right? Pardon my language, I'm getting punchy.
The advantage of proceeding with it at this point is that by getting that engineering done and the architectural design work done, it should give us a better handle on what exactly the public portion of the project costs are going to be, which at this point is the public improvements in the conference center.
Okay, that brings me to my next point. Public improvements, conference center. Does that mean that the city is building the conference center?
Council's still considering those options.
But we are the public improvements.
And the conference center would be a public improvement.
Well, why don't you finish asking your questions, and then we'll respond to that, because we're having this back and forth. So did you have any other questions, Sharon?
I did earlier, but no. I'll let it pass.
Okay. Is there anyone else? Okay. So let me close this to the public. So, Bob, let's public improvements, as we are discussing them tonight, are water line, sewer line, overhead, electrical lines, and I think some of the additional on-site
parking lots, West Grand Avenue improvements, transfer of the sewer dump station. All of those are included in those.
That's what we're when we say public improvements. Okay. Thank you, Paul. All right. Discussion time. So what I would do, let me start off by just throwing, I have a suggestion, and then we can go from there. I appreciate staff putting together this report in this mid-year review, and I appreciate the transfer of unused funds that were allocated for street beyond the bond measure. What troubles me or what I'm concerned about is that we had discussed employee proposed amendment costs. These were what we worked through with the labor groups. And so I would say I would feel much better if we would say let's, of that 215, if we were able to take 45,800 of that to cover those parts that are going to be considered ongoing operational, so that we take 45,800, cover those employee costs, and then take the remaining funds of the 169 and transfer them into, I think it's 275. Because I think if we're going to go through an RFP process, that's going to be a 2 to 3 month
right.
process, and there isn't much time left in this fiscal year. So I think we still would have enough money to move the needle forward on the on those public improvements. So then we can use funds that are more emergency in nature. And I do believe there are some other projects in here that might fit with the use of reserves, one-time emergency situations, public safety situations. So I want us to kind of be thinking in that manner. So with that, Mayor Pro Tem Lee, I want to let you go, and then we'll go from there.
So if I'm hearing correctly, I mean, the of the discussion we've had this evening, the fire department facility would be the life safety improvements that I think you're alluding to. So are you kind of starting the discussion with the 215 that was going to go to the lodge soon? I might need to see the numbers there, but so there was 45,000.
So when I look through these resolutions, attachment one, it talks about administrative services, community development. These are sort of the employee costs and what was negotiated with the employee groups, right? Correct, Bob?
Yes.
There's 8,300 there. And then when I go to the next attachment,
if I can find it, 37.5.
Attachment 2, it's 37.5.
Right.
To me, it makes more fiscal sense, or it's fiscally prudent to use some general fund dollars to cover those rather than reserve dollars. So that's why I'm saying the 215, as Bob talked about, were general fund dollars, and if we take 45,800 and use it in these locations, then we transfer whatever the remaining balance is, because I think we still have to get an engineer on board and we still need to firm up costs. I think that would leave us sufficient funding to move the engineering and the architecture forward.
Okay, so basically the 169 is what we transferred to the lodge project.
That's my idea.
Okay.
It would leave 169.2.
169.2?
169.2 for that. Okay.
Okay, so my math's off a little bit.
So it'd be 169.2 to the lodge to get that seed money for those works. The 45.8 to the employee costs. And then take the 35 for the life safety issues at the fire department that were... Is that
that's a suggestion. Maybe you can use reserves for that instead. It's a one-time expense, and I am, based on the testimony tonight, it's been a concern of mine, I would say.
Okay.
But I'm just one person, so I want to see what everyone thinks.
Okay. Based upon what I'm understanding the numbers, I think I'm supportive of that as well. So then my comments, one other comment before I get to the medical marijuana. And the styrofoam ban was on the special revenue funds. I think we need to have a conversation with regards to the charter communications. So the fact that it looks like we're funded for this year, and maybe it's a matter of funding in next year's budget for that. So it looks like charter or the DIVCA is kind of trying to play not pay us,
right.
the not pay us card. So I don't know if we need to have a strategy with regards to how that's going to work. So I'll just throw that out. Looks like that can go into the fiscal year 17 budget. So now that brings me back to the city manager's suggestion to delay the styrofoam ban and the medical marijuana. So the styrofoam ban, having been the representative for the city on the IWMA. It's my understanding that Paso Robles and Atascadero are not supportive of moving forward with the ban on their own. So realizing that the IWMA has kind of issued the challenge of if the majority of the cities do this, then we can make it countywide, or they would take up the challenge of countywide, which then falls Paso Robles and Atascadero into that discussion, where I can see where the city manager is going. It's like, okay, let somebody else be the fifth domino. I think we would be the only remaining domino under that scenario.
Gotcha.
So which then helps go to both of the recommendations for delay is we have a styrofoam ban ordinance that's been put in place by any number of other, basically four other jurisdictions. If we brought forward effectively the same ordinance as for the styrofoam ban, and if we were to have a medical marijuana ordinance that was very strongly packaged from other successful jurisdictions, would that reduce the time frame, or how could we reduce the time frame to get to move those forward from, because it would reduce the amount of staff time if we had effectively established ordinances provided to us, realizing we still have CEQA requirements to go through and some work to do, but the crafting of the language I think would be less time consuming, because we would be utilizing already established successful ordinances.
Okay, so I see you have the full attention of the city attorney. Nice job. So I think what you're basically saying is, even if we choose to defer this, whether it is to the next fiscal year or if it's to after the November election, that whenever the council decides, there may be a way to cut some of the time down. That I think Bob had alluded to 6 months.
6 months.
And so I think that's a discussion for another night, because there may be an opportunity. Correct.
Yes.
City Attorney, you get your mic on. I mean, she should at least use it.
All right. Thank you, Honorable Mayor and Council Members. I think that, with regard to language of the ordinances, that certainly is not an issue. There's a sufficient amount of them already out there. We have drafted three of them, two for other jurisdictions other than this one. The time-consuming part would be fitting whatever guidance we receive from you into our geography, our topography, our zoning, and development standards, into the Coastal Commission, local coastal plan. That gives rise to the six-month estimate. And the estimate is perhaps a little bit conservative. It gives us a good range of time, but not by a whole bunch. Because I think that having to basically custom fit whatever it is that the council desires to have as our involvement in the medical marijuana or any kind of marijuana trade in the city, as to where it goes, which zones, what areas need to be rezoned, do we need general plan amendments to accommodate that, because the zoning has to be consistent with the general plan amendment, and then the coastal issues. Those will be the more time-consuming. The language of the ordinance is that's not a great level of effort. So whenever the council is ready and directs staff to start moving forward on these things, we can have the ordinances for you to review and shape and draft pretty quickly. It'll be the detail work and the environmental review that's going to take time.
Okay. Thank you. Anything else?
And then my last... I've always misunderstood, I think, how long it takes for the financial system upgrade to occur, and so I'm wondering if, and I apologize for not having this question earlier, but I'm wondering if, with the allocation of the reserves and so forth, if you could kind of give us a timeline of how the priorities fall out with regards to this, realizing there's not any changes in the budgetary amounts, mm-hmm. but I know the I'm anticipating this is a staff efficiency benefit, so that will make the city operate more effectively as well.
It will be extremely more efficient. This is the timeline that we've worked with Harris on coming up with for when we think we're going to be completed with each of the modules. The way that the modules are budgeted, they're actually budgeted out until June of 2018. It's through the fiscal year 18. The financials and cash receipts we will hopefully be testing in March, go live in May. So we would test in March, do any tweaking and retesting in April, and go live in May. There's also miscellaneous accounts receivables that we can kind of set up at the same time that we're doing the testing. We can start that. That's very simple to put together. But the actual financials take a long time. It's loading budgets. It's loading prior year's budgets, making sure that the numbers come into the system correctly, which is one of the things I've been working on this last week. We had a few items come in and not come in correctly. One mistake was mine, that instead of coding the new fund number, because we've rewritten the chart of accounts, I had the old fund number there. So it's going through and making sure once you get everything in, making sure that everything loads correctly and properly. It's setting up all of the employees, and there's a lot more to it. I could show you whole lists of things that we have to have done in order for the financials to come live. The financials, since it is the base, the backbone of the entire system, is the most important one to make sure we get right, and it does take the longest because of that. Community development, we're actually making very good progress. We should be testing it, hopefully starting next week. It's starting to come together really nicely, and I think it's going to be a very good product. I think it's going to be very good for community development to get off the Fox Pro and to have something that's more intuitive and actually Windows-based. Community development wants to wait a few months until they're up and running before they do what's called a citizen portal. And after they're comfortable with the software, then they'll look at the citizen portal. What parts of the citizen portal do they want to open up? Part of the citizen portal is building official being able to be out in the field and actually make notes into an iPad or other type device and upload the information real time, instead of having to come back into the office and retype all of their notes. Payroll is what we plan on doing after the financials become live. We think that's going to be fairly straightforward in putting together. And so we're only estimating 7 to 8 months on getting payroll up and running. I only need to move this over, but
I can't crush it.
Seems pretty long. There's an HR application, which we don't have currently, that will be able to be used along with payroll, which we'll bring up and running along with payroll. Payroll should hopefully be live January of 2017, the start of a calendar year, which is really important for payroll to start at the beginning of a calendar year. It would make doing W-2s much, much easier in the future. If not, you have to put two systems together to build your W-2s. For utility billing.
So I guess, and I appreciate that, the overview that you're providing. I guess where I'm kind of curious is Harris providing the level of support that we are anticipating? Are they not? I mean, are we still convinced this is the right program for the city? How do we expedite them? How do we
help them more? I'm still convinced a lot of it is it's the setup. It's getting information. They found that they were not able to load the budgets, so I made a decision that I've already loaded 15 or 16's budget. I will probably go back at a future time and reload the prior year's budgets, but I'm not going to hold it up at this point and try to get the prior year's budgets in before we go live. I'll probably do that after we go live and put the prior year's budgets in, just so that we have 2 years history prior to. But it's a lot of setup. A lot of it is you have to think through the process. Okay, how do you want this to work? We're trying to make sure that the processes are going to be better than what we have now. Also, in doing this.
Otherwise, it doesn't make sense to do it.
So, correct.
Okay, great.
Okay.
Thank you.
Mayor?
Okay. I agree with the changing to the 169.2 figure. I just was reading through the staff report, and it seems like the only recommendation that wasn't recommended was the fire station fence, and I agree that's a very valid cause. I walk by there all the time, and my kids are always tempted to walk in there, so I can only imagine. And as far as the delaying with the styrofoam, I guess my one, are we saying that we want to push on and we want to go for it with the styrofoam, or what are we saying there?
So I guess we have to decide. So staff's recommendation is that we delay this until fiscal year 17, which really is what, July 1st. So I think it's a sound recommendation from staff, and then anytime after July 1st, we could take that item up.
Yeah, I would be fine with that, because while the drafting may, as the city attorney explained, may not be the hard part, I'm also thinking in enforcement hours and getting the word out to people. I think that might be a little more than we might think at first. So I don't think July is that far off.
Okay.
I'd be fine with that. And the medical marijuana, geez, just the one day discussion we had about that filled this place up. So I think that's going to be quite a bit of time, no matter how we slice it.
Yeah. So on that one, I was just thinking that instead of saying to after the general election, maybe we just push that into the fiscal year 17 as well. That way it sits in that time frame. It's not something that's a priority. So it's sort of a little different approach. Jeff?
Okay. I think that would be a good compromise.
Okay. Barbara?
I agree with that.
Okay. So we come to the moment of truth. Who is brave enough to try and craft a motion.
Honorable Mayor, can
yes.
I make one suggestion for the resolutions if the city attorney concurs? My recommendation on page one of each of amendment 12 and 13 to the budget is to change the line item that says fund balance to CIP 283, and then you could just go ahead and adopt the resolutions with those changes. If the city attorney concurs with me.
I think there would be
attachment one and two, Martin.
And I think there would only be one addition to that, Gayla, is basically on the second page where it says that the balance in total general fund reserves
right,
after
we would
adoption,
correct that.
We would either correct that or, yeah, you'd have to correct that.
Yeah, I could correct that.
I think those are really the only changes, so thank you for pointing that out. So that's attachment one and two, correct?
Yes.
So, City Attorney, should we take these one at a time? Is just, I think I would too. So let's deal with attachment one, and this is a resolution that provides funding for the agreement between the City of Grover Beach and the Grover Beach Executive Management employees. And so with the change as suggested by the Administrative Services Director, and instead of saying from reserves, we would delete that. It would be CIP Project 283. And then they would have to adjust the number regarding general funds on the backside, which I think would be $2,041,474.
So moved as amended.
Okay, there's a motion. Is there a second?
I'll second.
All right, there's no additional discussion on that motion. Let's do roll call.
Yes.
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 Yes. And then when we go to attachment two, which is the resolution to provide funding for the city's vacation buyback program for fiscal year 16, we would do the same thing, strike when it says from reserves, and it would be CIP Project 283. And then when it talks about general fund reserves, after adoption of this, I think that number would still be the same, correct?
No, we would adjust that number also.
You would have to adjust that number. Okay. Yeah, that wouldn't. I was thinking it would be the same as the 2,041,474. But you guys can do the quick math on that.
I will make sure it's correct before you sign it.
Thank you. Okay. Is there a motion?
So moved as amended.
Very good. Is there a second?
Second.
Okay. There's a motion and a second. There's no additional discussion. Roll call.
Yes.
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 Yes. So then I think we move to amendment or attachment number 3. This is the one that basically adopting the 14th Amendment to the Annual Appropriation Resolution Number 1526 to provide funding for various budget adjustments as listed in the fiscal year 16 mid-year budget report. And I would think that in this one we would be adding, I think, fire, I mean, if you put security, safety fencing, security fencing, and I believe 30,000, that would bring the total on the reserves to 100,000. Okay. And then I guess staff would just do the math and
we'll do the math.
Make the appropriate corrections.
So moved as amended.
Okay.
I'll second.
There's a motion and a second. If there's any additional discussion, if there's not any additional discussion, roll call.
Yes.
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 Yes. Did I miss one?
I was going to say, I feel like we missed the.
I feel like I missed one.
Basically taking care of it.
Yeah, the 139.2 that's remaining for CIP 283, we can do something internally that's called an appropriation transfer.
Okay.
And the city manager just signs the form and we can do the transfer.
I understand what the council's direction is there.
Very good.
I hope it's 169.
Right.
139.
Great. Thanks, everyone. Nice job on the staff report. We appreciate all the input. And I think we got through could have been a very tough topic in a decent amount of time.
We can blame it on Councilmember Bright.
Okay, so we're going to move on to item number 10. That is authorization to release request for proposals for the economic development strategy update. Mr. Buckingham.
Did I get the cue? I wasn't sure.
That's okay. You're good. Thank you.
Good evening, Mayor and members of the council. The city's current economic development strategy was prepared by staff and adopted by the council in 2008. In recognition, the strategy had become outdated and the majority of tasks completed, the city applied and was awarded a $100,000 planning and technical assistance grant from CDBG. A portion of that grant, about $40,000, was used to update the housing element in 2014, and therefore we have about $60,000 left for the update of the economic development strategy. Staff prepared a draft request for proposal or RFP to hire a consultant to update the strategy. Based on the council's primary goal of economic development, the draft work scope focuses on incorporating existing council policies, of which there are several, with new policies to create a more comprehensive economic development strategy. The draft work scope includes most of the typical tasks that are contained in economic development strategies, but it also indicates the city is open and flexible to the content and encourages suggestions on how to improve the work scope. Once the consultant is selected and has completed the background and research, one of the first tasks requires that the consultant provide an outline of the economic development strategy to the council prior to starting work. So that allows the council to comment on that final, more concise work scope and gives the council also the addition to provide additional direction and clarification before they start. So The work estimate effort is estimated to take 4 or 5 months, and it should be completed by September of this year. In conclusion, staff's recommending the council review the RFP, provide comments, and authorize staff to release the RFP for the hiring of the economic development strategy update. That concludes my report.
Very good. Thank you, Bruce. My staff report. Any questions of staff? Yes, Mayor Pro Tem.
So, just in one base question, and I'll apologize if it sounds too base, but so is there urgency to do this? I mean, I know we just went through a series of goals, kind of going through the goals and so forth, and we've got other items that were appeared to be a higher priority. Is this a relative of priority versus funding available?
Yes, this is a priority because the funding needs to be expended by September 30th of 2016.
Oh, okay, I missed that in here. Okay, so this is the same time frame as the other CDBG funding we were discussing.
Correct.
Okay. So then, I've got comments on the RFP, but nothing associated with questions at the moment.
Okay, very good. Miriam, do you have anything?
No, I have no questions.
Okay, Barbara.
Nor do I.
And I don't either.
Okay.
That's pretty straightforward.
Wow. So let's see. Anyone from the community have any questions on this item? Seeing none, we'll bring it back to the council. How about some discussion? Jeff, did you have some thoughts on this?
I just had two thoughts, actually, on page 2. Of under the city opportunities. So there's a discussion of several properties that are either vacant or associated with other projects. There's the about almost eight-acre parcel on El Camino Real, which could be an opportunity for development adjacent to the Holiday Inn and A.J. Spurs property. I don't know if this is the right spot to kind of insert that as an opportunity. And then as part of the scope of work, starting on page 4, but not sure where it could fit into there, just trying to encourage recommendations for how to implement the strategies and recommended next steps. I mean, there's a good discussion with regards to documents that are available and goals and policies and kind of developing the document itself. But I'm thinking it'd be advantageous to see what the consultant does as this is what you have. Now go. This is the steps to implement it. So it kind of gives staff and the city a roadmap. Okay. Of what we can take as next steps, rather than having basically getting the document and then us developing the steps. This is what they do this is what they do for a living. Bruce does what he does for a living. You can take with the recommendations and kind of figure out how it fashions into what we can do. So it'd be a roadmap.
Okay.
I probably spoke way too long on that, so I apologize.
I think hopefully everyone got the gist of that. Barbara, you have anything in the discussion?
No, I really don't.
Okay. Miriam?
No, I think Jeff's suggestions were good suggestions. I really like the suggestion of, how not only what are your suggestions, but how do we get this done? Because, I was really impressed with the 2008 study. If we had done everything since 2008, I mean, we'd be sitting pretty. And I was I want to not only have a study, I really want to carry it out, like, every single part this time. So, like the idea. We got the funding. Let's do it.
Well, I do want to say kudos to staff and to Bob, because I know in 2008 we laid that out. And while we didn't get everything, I think we made some significant, we accomplished quite a few things. So I wanted to say that, first of all. I did, when looking back at the 2008, talked about, we looked at this city gateway signage program, and I'm just thinking at some point we need to have a conversation about that, because I knew we had, when... certain many years ago when I had to go, and I think at the time it was Councilmember Lieberman, we both went to Caltrans and said, because I believe we had a consulting team come. They actually passed Grover Beach. They couldn't get here. Remember that, Bob? And then we had to go to Caltrans and say, we need signs out there to say Grover Beach next to exits. Mm-hmm. And one of their requirements is that we can do that, but you're going to have some directional signs or some wayfinding signs. So we never lived up to that commitment. We got the two signs on the freeway that said Grover Beach next exit at 4th and Oak Park, but we never got the signs when you come in, like if you're going to Pismo, when you come off of Matty Road and you get the sign with the city logo and it says downtown that way, beach that way. So I don't know if that's something we should talk about in this or separately. But let me just back up. I digress. I saw that and I just thought there's got to be a simpler way to get gateway signs without going through, hey, this comprehensive sign update that's going to cost $30,000. My two comments are, when I look at the scope of work, and while I understand what staff's trying to do, I'm looking at the third sentence under scope of work, and it says the EDS should not set goals for policies that are unrealistic, unattainable to achieve. And then in the next sentence says the EDS should recognize the city's constraints as well as the opportunities in identifying a practical plan. So I wondered if we could maybe do a little more positive spin on this instead of saying, hey, put together something that's not unrealistic or obtainable. I think there's got to be a better way to just say that the city also wants EDS that has a practical and common sense approach based on the city's recognized opportunities and challenges, and then you wouldn't even need the next two sentences. So I think we just need to have that. I just think it's a mindset, right? It's a mindset where we really want to stay positive, and that's just kind of the way I operate, the way I think. And then I did want to ask a question on page 5, second paragraph, last sentence, where it says the consultant should also examine whether a business incubator center could enhance opportunities, and just wanted to kind of get a better understanding of what that thought process was and if we shouldn't be building on and adding a sentence about, while we talk about the EBC doing clusters, I think we didn't go far enough last time to say, hey, these are the kind of businesses based on the resources we have available that we want them to identify. Are there businesses out there that would complement the broadband initiative that we should target and go after? So that's kind of... So I think those are the two things. I think everything else was very well done. Okay. Bruce, is everyone okay with those?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. I think with that, okay. Any questions from staff or the council? Make sure we... I think my only other question, sorry you guys didn't speak up soon enough, on page 7, where it talks about, in the last paragraph, we talked about the city manager shall consider any matter appealed during a scheduled hearing within 30 days. The decision of city manager shall be final with respect to matters of fact. All disputes and or appeals shall be submitted in writing to, and then it gives the city of Grove Beach. So I didn't know if that's standard practice or if there should be something to talk about appeal to city council.
Excuse me. That is CDBG required language to resolve disputes. So we put that standard language in there.
Okay. So it is standard. Okay.
Yeah.
Great. Thank you for that clarification. Okay. So the staff record. Well, let me see. Sharon, did you have anything you wanted to add on this one? Okay. So the staff recommendation is to authorize staff to release the request for proposal to prepare an economic development strategy update. Bruce, here's one. So we're envisioning when they do this and the implementation, and I think, Jeff, you kind of talked about this, but I know when we did the 2004 visioning, we included the community in our process. Is that kind of something we envision this time around?
Based on the budget as well as the time, what we've done is we've truncated that to be stakeholder interviews only. So the council could certainly
provide us a list? I mean, I think staff has a very good handle on who the stakeholders are, we'd be happy to expand that. I mean, essentially, we also wrote it that it could be the expectation that the consultant would meet with you individually, but it could be they could try to get together the local bankers and try to have a meeting with them. So we left it pretty open-ended to try to maximize that input, but not having a full public outreach program where we would actually have a council meeting or a workshop where you would be drawing people in. It's still an opportunity. Again, that's something that, depending on the proposals, the budget, when it comes back to the council for the final review, that's something that you can consider if there's money's available.
Okay, very good.
Perhaps that language can be added in as an optional component to the scope of work. I mean, I see our project start date is end of March with a completion day by September, so there might be a time between those two periods to have a public work, at least a public workshop, if budget
and time allows.
And time allows.
Okay, everyone okay with that?
Yeah, I mean, one thing we can consider when we decide to go that way, it seemed like when we went out for the roads, we had meetings and some people came, but just putting a survey on the website, we got, I think, 100 responses. Mm-hmm. So it might even be a simpler and easier for the consultant to come up with a survey that can be spread over Facebook and the web, and we could probably get a lot quickly that way.
Okay, yeah. good ads. Okay, so there is a recommendation, and so someone will make a motion on this.
I'll recommend that we authorize staff to release the request for proposals with suggestions and modifications as discussed, and to prepare the economic development strategy update.
Second.
There's a motion and a second. If there's no additional discussion, this is a voice vote. All in favor?
Aye.
All opposed? None. Motion carries. We have no pulled consent agenda items tonight. How about council committee reports? And so let's start with Barbara. Anything, Barbara?
Actually, no.
Okay.
I did go to the Prado meeting, but I was out of town for the capsule meeting.
So. Okay. Well, if you think of anything next, you can bring up next meeting.
No.
Miriam, you have anything?
Because we held our reports, I think, a couple times. So I had a housing trust fund meeting. But a lot of what we talked about, we actually talked about here today, just about what kind of units would work in Grover Beach. And then just as our Chamber of Commerce rep, want to give one more congratulations to our Citizen of the Year, Bruce Van Horn. That was a wonderful event last week. And had an HSOC meeting where we had a presentation from the Slo Women's Shelter and RISE, and was good to get educated on that. And the services are actually available to all victims of domestic violence. We have that throughout the county. If you call the one number, they can direct you. But we do have those services. And then I attended an HSOC coordinating committee meeting just regarding warming shelters. And, you know, the good news is our warming shelter is up and running. It's technically an AG, but very close to Grover, and it's doing great. I know one worry they always have is volunteer fatigue, but so far, you know, things are going. Jana just told me tonight they've had 160 different, you know, people using it. I mean, not different people, probably some repeat people, but you know, one concern was people aren't going to use it. But they are using it, and there were at least 20 people there last night. So it's an asset, and it's something that's working, which is always good to hear about in that genre. Two things that were brought up at the HSOC meeting that I'll just bring up, and I don't know, we can discuss during council communications if you want, but we were each HSOC member was asked to bring back to their council or their city the idea of declaring a shelter emergency. And our city attorney can look more at it, because I know when I was in his position, I never liked when people handed me one portion of a statute and tried to tell me what it meant, because it may not mean what people are saying it means. But what they're saying it means is we declare a shelter emergency, and that means if there's an event like the El Nino just dumps a ton of water and it truly is an emergency for people to be outdoors or living outdoors, at that point, because we have the shelter emergency in place, we could open a public building if we needed to, or perhaps, and this is where the law is a little sketchy, I'm not sure, even if perhaps a church in town wanted to open up, they wouldn't have to go through the long permitting process because it's an emergency situation. So HSOC is really asking us all to consider this. I know the Board of Supervisors is also considering the same thing. So that was one thing. And the other thing, I went to an HSOC MASH coordinating committee event, coordinating committee meeting, and HSOC is going to try to put on these mobile assistance fairs throughout the county. Kind of in addition to the 50 Now project, they want this to be like another hands-on thing that they do, because so much of what we do is shifting money here and there, which is important, but it's good to, you know, be hands-on. So the first one was in Paso in October. The second one, well, and so the second one, depending on what we want to do, and again, we can decide during council communications if we want to agendize it to discuss, could be for South County, we could be in Grover Beach. And it's the question is, do we want it sooner or later, you know, more of like a March, or do we want more of a May, or you know, in thinking about these encampments being cleared out, do we want it sooner, or do we want to wait till that all dies down, and how to use our resources? And there's going to be one in San Luis in the summer, and they're thinking about having one out in Morro Bay. So, and then going along with that, where in the town would we want to have it? Because you need Wi-Fi to hook people up with Social Security services, mm-hmm. and stuff like that. And so you'd probably want to be indoors. And the hours are like usually 4 hours, 10 to 2. So those are things we can consider if we want to agendize it further. But those have been quite a bit going on there.
Yeah. Jeff?
So I had a couple committees. We'll start with Zone 3. One of the action items that came, or recommendations for to then move on to the board, was to fund a portion of a clearing project to open up Carpenter Canyon Creek. So which then led to a larger discussion as to the viability of Zone 3 to actually make that decision. And so one of the, because obviously it's a water system is kind of how we interpret it, the bylaws actually do allow it to be more than a water system functionality. There's also a property representative component and so forth. So there might be a discussion coming forward in subsequent months as to whether that Zone 3 becomes a larger regional organization to talk about more than just water, or if it talks about water and maybe stormwater and how the two play together. So more on that as it goes through. The IWMA meeting was canceled in January, so we'll have another one in March. EVC was always well attended and always productive. Mr. Lewis from PISMO gave a presentation on that. And then I was able to attend the Air Pollution Control District meeting on Councilmember Bright's behalf. Fascinating group of people and update on Rule 1001 basically is that the organizations of the Air Resource Board, the State Park representatives, and the APCD are all moving together in a very cooperative fashion and having results that are being seen and moving forward with through with Coastal Commission oversight of the emergency permits and so forth. Obviously, there will always be folks that that feel that too much is being done because it's impinging upon the ridership, or there's other folks who feel that it's not moving fast enough because of the health issues on the Mesa. So, two items that did garner a little bit of attention in the media were the contract was extended for the APCO, the Air Pollution Control Officer. So his contract was extended for through February 1st of 2017 with a 2.5% COLA. The interesting part of that contract is it does not extend beyond that February 1st date unless by mutual approval by the board and the APCO wanting to move forward. And then there is going to be a study session, for lack of a better term, to discuss board civility and discussion of how to the missions and the goals and in the organization to make sure that at least there's a discussion of the understanding of how that organization operates. So that's going to take place in March.
Great.
Last thing, and I apologize, that Slow Coastal Regional Sediment Management Plan Steering Committee, still don't know what that does, but I have gotten an email or two, so they do seem to be kind of coalescing or organizing, but the steering committee itself has not started to gather that I'm aware of or have been invited to.
Very good. Thank you.
Don, I did overlook one thing.
Okay. Barbara, go ahead.
The South County Transit had its quarterly meeting, and they are wanting to update the joint powers agreement. So that will be coming to the council. I'm not sure what the process is going to be, but I do have a copy of the clean copy of the upgrade, Martin, if you would like to have it. And the other thing is that with the Prado, Friends of Prado, they are putting on their annual fundraiser. So if anybody would like to go to Mardi Gras on Saturday night, I have tickets.
This Saturday?
Yes, this Saturday night. It will be in the Veterans Hall in San Luis from 5 to 8:30 or something like that.
So
sit-down dinner. Wine tasting, all sorts of wonderful things.
So is it real Mardi Gras, or is it the San Luis County-style Mardi Gras?
Well, probably San Luis-style Mardi Gras. Well, actually, not even the old San Luis. Although, a number of the past kings and queens will be there.
Oh, wow. Okay.
So it will be very, very festive.
Great. Thank you for sharing. Okay, so Five Cities Fire Authority, the board did meet. We have given direction to move forward with a strategic plan, which really looks at what are some of the short-term opportunities and then long-term opportunities as well. I believe the chief has been in touch with a facilitator. So a facilitator will be brought on to work with the chief, with the staff, and I believe with me as chair on that board to take a look and see what does this organization want to be when it grows up. I think we've had 5 years of great success, and I want to thank everyone who was involved. I know Bob and other Steve Adams, and I think there was an executive committee, and Martin was there when we first started this. So I know we put together the agreement. And we knew that down the road we were going to have to take another look at it and see if there had to be amendments. So there's going to be some discussion about amendments to the existing agreement. And so what the board has asked to do, so I've kind of pivoted from doing the strategic plan, the actual amendments to the agreement, we said let's break it out in two areas because they're going to put together a sheet or a list of those agreements that we believe we can, that the three member organizations can reach quick consensus on. For example, there's nothing in the document that for us to take on another partner. So if the city of Pismo Beach decided all of a sudden that CAL FIRE is not meeting their needs and they wanted to become part of this organization, we don't have a gateway or an entry point for them. So those are some of the things, and there's some administrative cleanups that I believe we reached consensus as a board
to have them put those on a sheet, put that on a list, and then they'll come back to us and say, these are the things that the board is recommending be changed, and that'll be presented to the respective city councils as well as the Oceanic Community Services District. Now, the other part of that is those items that we think is going to take a little more discussion on, and a lot of that has got to be, and one of the big ticket items is going to be the funding formula. And so I know that there were four different criteria that was originally put into the formula that involved service calls, valuation of buildings, population, and I think the fourth one escapes me now.
Actually, it's individual departments are staffed.
Yeah, perfect. Okay. So we know that, and then there's some discussion about increasing the number on the board, and so there's like four items, but again, that may take some additional discussion, whether it's a formation of a smaller subcommittee or whatever, but there's going to be some, we know there's going to be some significant and serious conversations around making some changes around some of those items, because when we're talking about how we continue to fund this organization and going forward, we need to have some honest and straightforward conversations. So I'll keep you up to date when I get those, and I'm sure the chief will come in when it's appropriate to make a presentation. Okay. I don't have anything for SLOCOG. That meeting is actually Wednesday. So that leaves me with the South San Luis Obispo County Sanitation District, and I'm trying to decide where to begin. So I'm sure you've all seen the media. At the last meeting on, that was tonight, I can't remember the specific day. So 2 weeks ago, the Knutson report was presented to the board, and we have lots of public input at that meeting. And after considering all the testimony, after considering a very lengthy presentation by Mr. Knutson, I believe it was about 45, 50 minutes, the board unanimously voted to, one, receive and file the report, to, two, direct staff to implement the suggestions in the report, including sending that report to legal authorities, three, to approve an additional budget amount of $14,205. The original budget, the original proposal came in at $55,000. Mr. Knutson came back and said he needed another $22,000. The board approved that, and then this was in addition to that. So the board also decided to invite Mr. Wallace to address the management practice report at the board's next meeting, which is Wednesday. So I suggest, I know that there's going to be quite a bit of discussion and debate at the meeting on Wednesday. But I do want to be very specific for you all. I know that I asked the city manager to send this out in his Friday report, but I want to talk about some of the things that are being done. Now, this report came out, and it talked about conflict of interest and monies that were charged by Mr. Wallace and his firm, and I'm not going to speak to that tonight. That's basically something that's out there. The report is available for anyone who wants to read it. But I do want to talk about the best management practices that came forward out of that report. So I want to hit on a few just so people know that it was just not a witch hunt, that there were some items that came out that the board has already authorized and we're already doing them. One is to conduct an annual board review of important district policies, which means board bylaws, purchasing policy. And so we are actually in a process of reviewing the bylaws that'll probably come to us in a meeting, I believe, probably toward the end of February or March. So we had already started working on that aspect. And that also includes having vendors who have contracts and dealings with the district should be advised of regulations, laws that prevent a conflict of interest whereby a district employee cannot receive any form of payment from the vendor either directly or indirectly. So we are addressing that. Enter into an annual contract with a firm providing general engineering services, which requires board review before exceeding a specific pay amount. On January 6, 2016, the board authorized and directed staff to enter into a one-year contract for engineering services with MKN and Associates, so that contract is not to exceed $100,000, and any project that is going to exceed $5,000 must come to the board for approval. So we are putting checks and balances into the process. There was a recommendation to retain records, recorded minutes of board meetings at the district for at least 3 years to provide a digital backup to written minutes and to facilitate an audit trail for those issues arising out of board meetings. And so the board has retained AGP Video to provide video streaming, digital archiving, and indexing services, and that was done on July 1st, 2015. So you can see we have taken the vast majority of these, and I believe there are about 12 recommendations. One of the recommendations was to hire an in-house district administrator who will be responsible to independently review and administer contracts for services, in particular consultant contracts for engineering services, conduct an annual board performance evaluation of district administrator, and the board has hired CPS HR services to assist in recruiting a full-time district manager. And I learned earlier today that we actually have some finalists, and those applications will be delivered to the board so that we can select a permanent employee, a full-time employee, to serve in that role. Basically, it's to hire an independent human services professional to perform human resource functions for the district. One of the things that had come out, not necessarily in this report, but I've heard there had been some personnel issues, and so this district that had been performing very well over many years, when employees had issues that came up that really required HR resources, that kind of fell to the plant superintendent or the district administrator. So what the board has done is retained Lara HR services to provide human resources consulting services, and she's working through the procedures manual. I'm going to put everything in one binder and in one location. And so there have been others that are recommended, but I do want to get back to, at the bottom it says, well, seek additional funding to pay for redundancy projects, diligently proceed to complete needed redundancy projects. And so notice of the district's proposed wastewater treatment rate increase, a major component to funding for this project, which is a mandated project, was mailed to district customers and property owners in December 30, 2015. And tentatively, it's set to be heard on February 17, 2016. There's going to be a lot of discussion around that one. And I can just tell you, based on information that had come to light, I've got some of my own questions on rate increases and what's in and what's out. So more to be discussed later. The final bullet on here was to forward information concerning waste discharge permits for state parks and Yo Banana Boys to appropriate federal, state, or county law enforcement officials to determine whether the further investigation of potential violation of law is warranted. And so the board, as I said earlier, unanimously voted to send not only that component, but the report itself to the San Luis Obispo County District Attorney, to the State Attorney General, and to the local FBI offices. So that's what we're doing. We're taking the recommendations very seriously. We're taking action on those. And Mr. Wallace will have an opportunity to respond on Wednesday night. And I know there are some folks out there who are basically saying we shouldn't allow him any time, but I think, and the board agreed, that it's only appropriate to at least give him an opportunity to address the board. And so it'll be an interesting meeting Wednesday night. Anyway, I think that's all I've got to report here. I wanted to take a little extra time on that. I know that you've all been given this, but I know that folks may be in the community wondering what now. And so that's what we're doing. Okay. How about council communications? Miriam, I think you brought up a communication already,
yeah,
right?
So, yeah, the couple I had was just some direction as to whether in the future you all would like to agendize the two issues, the one declaring a shelter emergency, whether that's appropriate or not, and two, hosting a MASH event. You know, first of all, could learn more about it. I could have someone from either HSOC or the MASH committee come and discuss it. And if we do want to host, which I think we probably will, I don't know, when and where. So I don't know if that's something you would want to think about agendizing or where we would go from there, those two things.
Any thoughts, Jeff or Barbara?
And my thoughts first on the MASH, is that fully funded by the HSOC
yes,
or some other organization?
So that we would not be putting up any funding except, for example, if we offer a space, we would perhaps, you know, fund the space.
Gotcha. So let's say Trueville has Wi-Fi, which I'm not even sure it does. I don't think it does. But so there would, and maybe that's the first question, is I don't know of any public facilities that have Wi-Fi.
Ramona does, doesn't it?
I don't believe either one of them do.
No.
Yeah.
No.
So which would kind of preclude us from
right.
extending that opportunity.
So that's something we'll have to see if they can get Wi-Fi from an outside source of some sort.
No, I was just going to say, so if we, let's, you know, we can put this on a future agenda and and have a more robust discussion.
Yeah, because if we, you know, just with everything going on in our community, this is something HSOC is doing around the county anyway, so it might be, you know, a good, more than a good thing, but also a gesture of goodwill and a good thing if we can provide a space. It's 4 hours, like a 10 to 2. It's one day. Nobody's taking over your neighborhood. It's one day.
Well.
Well, let's have a conversation, because I'm just going to say, yeah. I'm just going to say we had a couple people come in tonight. Even the doctor came in tonight and said, we support what you're doing, and you did a good job, and I want to give the police chief and Bob and staff credit for, one, building a partnership to move forward on that encampment at the train station. And so with that, and then the whole situation we've got with People's Kitchen, I'm not saying one way or the other. I think we all know what the situation is. There are folks in this community who, if we're going to have this conversation, we want to be very careful.
Yes.
I mean, you talked about fatigue, and I can tell you I'm fatigued, and I you know, it's an issue larger than just Grover Beach. Mm-hmm. But I think, just to be fair, we can have the discussion, but, you know, maybe not tonight. I think there's interest in putting it on an agenda in the future.
Yeah, I would think for the MASH.
It would be great to discuss, and if it's, because if it's not a good fit for us, that's good for them to know too. So.
Okay.
And then with regards to the crisis discussion, I think I'd be interested to see what the county who is going to have this discussion at tomorrow's board meeting. The discussion that happens there, and then perhaps, as you had mentioned, having the city attorney take a look at the documentation to see if there's if it's even appropriate for us to have that conversation, and then we can discuss whether to agendize that. That'd be where I would think on that.
Is that something that would work, city attorney? I guess you're asking for staff to give a report back, or
I don't know.
Before deciding to place it on an agenda?
Decided, yeah.
I don't know.
Is that appropriate?
Certainly. I'll be glad to review anything that's available with that regard. And then, I mean, one way or the other, I think we would need to, if you wanted to hear from staff, we would need to come to an agendized meeting.
Okay. So it looks like we're going to place those on the in a future agenda and have that discussion. And Bob's saying it's going to be after February 16th.
Come on, Bob.
I love seeing that smile on his face over there.
Red's a good color for him as well.
Yeah, yeah. Yep. Bob, do you have any council communications?
No, I don't.
Jeff?
Actually, perhaps that actually leads into a council communication, is that obviously this is the penultimate meeting for our city manager, and the 16th we are going to have a reception for him, as that will be his last meeting with us. So consider this an extension or an invitation to the community to come down and say thank you and join us in saying job well done and wishing him a happy retirement on February 16th. So at the council meeting.
Okay, so. Well, very good. So that takes one of mine away. I don't need to communicate that. It's okay, man. It's the benefit of going last. Everyone said already. I did want to. So I think I thanked and commended the staff and how we have dealt with the train depot encampment. I think it couldn't have gone much smoother. I think Chief would agree it couldn't have gone much smoother. And we know we've gotten comments from a lot of folks who are, quite frankly, don't live in Grover Beach. We've gotten some emails, and the businesses that we've talked to and the residents, which we witnessed tonight, have all expressed gratitude for how that's been handled. And certainly we're compassionate in Grover Beach, but I think business owners and residents are fatigued, and I know that we're talking about the other area, moving to that area. So as we do that, we want to make sure that we are all aligned, because with the train station, we had a project that really it was a big catalyst in that. And now we know residents from Margarita had come here and expressed some concern. So as we move forward, just to make sure that we're aligned and we have messaging, so because we know the media is going to be there. But nice job and nice work so far. The last thing I want to talk about is the Coastal Commission. I understand the Coastal Commission will be in Morro Bay. Is that next week, Bob?
Yes, starting next Wednesday, I believe.
Okay. So I didn't know if there was a reason or an opportunity for us to either go to the meeting or if they have a reception to do some networking. I didn't know.
I guess there's a reception Thursday. We just got the communication today. We'll get that out to you.
Sounds good. Thank you. So I think with that, that's the last of council communication. City manager, do you have any reports or comments?
Not this evening. I'll have something next meeting.
Okay. City attorney?
Not tonight. Thank you, Mayor.
Okay. And then we have one closed session item tonight.
Yes, and that's public employment position of interim city manager.
Okay. So with that, we're going to recess in the closed session.